starting very shortly. We'll be allowing the chairperson to officially activate the session. Thank you.
Good morning and welcome to those who have joined us today. We will not waste time to do the introductions. What we will ask is that when it is your turn to speak, introduce yourself as well as the organization that you are representing. But for those that are joining us today, we would want to bring them on board in terms of understanding what is it that we are doing here. What we are doing here is that we are looking at the DFI's funding instruments. We are actually looking at how the current funding instruments address the felt needs of SMMEs and cooperatives. The reason for us to do that is that we have engaged directly with SMMEs and cooperatives. And throughout those engagements, five issues came up. One, lack of access to finance. Two, lack of access to the market. Three, inadequate skills training. Skills that are related to technical skills that are required in order to do whatever you would want to do as a business person. And business management skills, which relate to how you would then manage your business and not lose the money that you have already made. Four, inadequate infrastructure. In terms of the infrastructure, they refer to two things. The infrastructure that you would operate from, for instance, if you are in an enterprise that is manufacturing, they are talking about the space that you would require in order to manufacture and deliver to your customers on time. That is one. The second one is infrastructure that supports your business, like is there a road or a transport infrastructure that would enable you to take your goods from point A to point B? Two, is there a communication infrastructure which can enable you to conduct your business without having to physically go to your client, but use the communication systems, the telecommunication systems that would allow you to communicate with your client, even if your client was sitting in Switzerland and you are in South Africa? That is the infrastructure. The third one is the energy infrastructure to drive your business. Is there an energy infrastructure that would enable you to conduct your business? And the fourth one is water and sanitation. We all know that water is life. Even if you are involved in production of textiles, at some point you need water to dye your fabrics. So those four are key to enable businesses to business people to actually establish their businesses. That's what we are doing. But then we also need to look at the land use patterns and provision of that infrastructure. the poorest areas in South Africa are those that did not have these four things that I've mentioned, infrastructure, poor transport infrastructure, lack of communication infrastructure, lack of energy infrastructure, and lack of water and sanitation infrastructure. That is what has caused a lack of investment in those areas, resulting with them being poverty notes. And if we were then to address the issue of poverty and unemployment, we would then also look at how investment in those areas would be attracted without these four things being provided, that infrastructure. The fifth issue that is raised by SMMEs and cooperatives is the red tape. They are saying even if all these things are provided and there is commitment that they are going to be provided, but it takes very, very long for them, for such things to be provided. That is what red tape means. When a commitment has been made that we will fund this particular project, but it takes longer to release the funds, that is red tape. When a DFI meeting takes time every 2 months or 3 months to process applications for funding, when in a bank, commercial bank, funding an application is processed as it comes, that is red tape. When the payment of an invoice of a person that has delivered goods and services is supposed to take 30 days, but then it takes more than 30 days, it takes 60, 90, 120 days, that is red tape. The red tape that we saw yesterday was presented by Musa Komo. Their project, he says, is on the IDP of a municipality. There is commitment that was made by the Department of Agriculture to an extent that they leveled the ground where the project was going to be established to have 400 chicken layers. The project already has got a target market. But that funding that was committed in 2012 has not been released to complete the structure. That is what red tape means. The slow pace in doing things, as if time is not moving. That has resulted with enterprise deviating from their original plan of selling eggs that are produced by them and forcing them to go and buy eggs from other people that are producing and then have a markup. So they have been forced by the red tape to become a middleman. That's what we are dealing with. So the purpose then of this workshop is that we want to look at what is it that has been done in the past 20 years in relation to development of SMMEs and cooperatives, specifically the funding part of it. What is it that has been done? Number two, what has been the impact of that funding in the development of SMMEs and cooperatives to a level that we can say those SMMEs and cooperatives that were funded were effectively developed in such a way that they have made an impact on triple challenges, which is poverty, unemployment, and inequalities. That is what is it? What is the impact of this investment? And we have noticed that yesterday, in most of the presentation, that doesn't come out. Even from the people that have been are presenting their projects, they are not talking about the number of jobs and the improvement of the socio-economic conditions of those that got those jobs. They are also not talking about whether the people who were absorbed by those projects were coming from the unemployed, or it's a teacher who resigned from being a teacher and then became an entrepreneur. Because there's a difference in that. If the person who is now in the in an enterprise is a person who had an income before, which means that in terms of reducing unemployment and poverty, although there would be an enterprise, if that enterprise has not absorbed people who were not employed and people who were on the poverty level, we would then have a different way of looking at that particular enterprise. We would say the enterprise is successful in terms of improved economic standards of the people that are in there, but in terms of it impacting on poverty reduction and unemployment, we would still have to look at that. So that's number two. Number three, what are the gaps that we are identifying which makes it impossible to make a dent on poverty, unemployment, and inequalities in our funding models? And number four, how are we going to then address those gaps? What changes do we want to effect in order to correct that situation? So we have to come out of this workshop having answered those four. So the approach here is that we speak. We take out our caps as different organizations, although we present as those organizations, but when we are discussing, we take out our caps so that we don't defend what we are doing. We analyze the situation as South Africans. And we analyze the situation in terms of the investment that is being made having an impact on poverty reduction, unemployment reduction, and dealing with inequalities. So, in short, we are here to look at ourselves from a mirror perspective and say, are we beautiful enough, or there is something that we still need to put that will make us more beautiful? That's what we are here to do. And just to introduce something, we had tried, we thought that we were going to have a model presented to us first of the Mondragon Cooperative. The Mondragon Cooperation, which is based more on the cooperative development. We communicated with the embassy, of the Spanish embassy, and we are grateful that they were able to get us a person from Mondragon. That person arrived in the country yesterday and slept in Johannesburg. Today he's coming here in Cape Town, but he will first meet with the embassy, and then tomorrow will be joining us. I think it is a great opportunity because the approach of Mondragon is something that we can learn from, of how they managed to deal with issues of poverty, developed a very sustainable cooperation that does not, in times of difficulties, get affected in the manner that we get affected in terms of retrenchment in our country. And I think that there is a lot that we can learn from the Mondragon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opening remarks. Welcome, stakeholders, honorable members. We acknowledge the presence of the whip of the committee. Welcome with us. Without going into details in terms of the methodology that was articulated here by my colleague yesterday, I just want to emphasize the fact that, as the chairperson has said, that we have to stick to the point in terms of the brief for the presentation to save time. Let's be straight to the point. I thought I have a rally voice, so I should be able to get it on the mic, even if there's a gap between that. I think I'll try. Thank you very much. To the point, so that we collectively work together to save time and finish on time. My role as the facilitator, maybe to introduce myself for those who are not here, is Malusi Dolo. Yesterday we had Muzi, and then tomorrow we're going to have Mandisa to finish up with the workshop. My role as the facilitator is just to guide the process and make it as easy as possible. So that's precisely my role, is catalytic, and I'm not going to be involved too much in the content. But Chairperson, I can't help it to also give a little bit of a brief in terms of the context after you have done it. We need to be reminded as both stakeholders, and also thank the committee and the Chairperson in particular for affording us this opportunity to do a bit of a soft oversight, to prepare the department and the stakeholders to be ready to assist in terms of the implementation of the plans of government. The concern is very clear. It simply says that government, if parliament is elected to represent the people and ensure government by the people under the constitution. So the people comes twice here. Chairperson highlighted the importance of making sure that every work that is done by government is directed towards the target market and nothing else. So that concept of people there, or the element of people, is highlighted and is repeated many times in the constitution. What Parliament did in this term is to make sure that the oversight function is directed towards the implementation of the NDP. One of its goals, outcome-oriented goals, is safe. Very clearly in the strategic plan, I encourage that even the stakeholders will read this plan. It says, enhance Parliament's oversight and accountability over the work of the executive to ensure implementation of the objectives of the medium-term strategic framework MTSF 2014-29. And then the chairperson yesterday emphasized the triple challenges that most of our people are facing. And it is in that context that this committee wants to make sure that we work together with the executive to make sure that the plans, the work, is there to work to changing the life of our people. On that note, I will step off in terms of providing that context and then move straight to the technicalities of the program. We are advised that the presentation on FASA is being delayed, and therefore we need to adjust it. So in other words, instead of taking FASA, we're going to take industrial parks. That is Mr. Pitaloi, Orlando West Industrial Park. Mr. Pitaloi, if you are ready, this is the opportunity for you to come forward and then, pardon? Okay. To actually make that presentation. 15 minutes presentation, 15 minutes clarification question from honorable members. Over to you, Mr. Baloyi. Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Baloyi. We have a bit of a challenge because there is no mic. I don't know whether it would be possible for you to sit there and use that mic to speak.
Okay, no, I mean for the slide. It's not gonna show. It's fine. I don't know. Okay, thank you again. I'm going to start by giving you the background of the industrial parks. Probably the ones in Gauteng. The history of this industrial park, during the 1980s, Small Business Development Corporation, SBDC, a public private initiative under apartheid government, established a number of industrial park sites in the black townships with an objective of establishing and creating economic activities by empowering poor black small businesses, more especially manufacturers and service providers in the townships. These are also aligned with today's government objectives of creating jobs and alleviating poverty and unemployment. Small Business Development Corporation, SBDC, in Braka, then recruited people from their township backyards to operate within these premises to semi-formalize their businesses with the promise that after a 10-year continuous occupation of tenancy, they will then automatically be the rightful owners of the properties. In 1991, tenants from these industrial parks formed business membership organizations, which started to operate as body corporates. And with their executive committees, the association became the tenants' mouthpiece and created the park's rules to assist tenants to run their businesses without any harming others and to protect the parks from being vandalized. These rules are still in existence and are the pillars of the industrial parks, as they also assist in making sure that compliance is honored. In January 26, 1993, tenants approved and engaged SBDC in their 10-year promise. During the process of consultation and engagement, the SBDC registered the properties in their own name without disclosing. TenneT then had no other option but to engage the government through DTI. In the second half of 1996, after formation of Gauteng Industrial Park Association, negotiations took place. During those days, Kula, which was a government entity whose mission was to mentor small businesses and to encourage the sustainable development of such business, failed to reach their goal. After Kula, a new body called Small Enterprise Finance Agency, SEFA, took over the ownership. This is the government institution that is supposed to provide financial support to SMEs, who, on contrary, became the landlord of these industrial parks. SEFA, just like Kula, failed completely before they could even start to run and to support their tenants, both morally and financially. To try and make things easy for SEFA and its management, the Tenants Association have tried many times without any luck to invite them to visit the industrial parks so that they can liaise with tenants and learn to know what their challenges are. Mafia agents, it is very much disturbing to hear SMEs around the industrial parks referring to a government agent as a mafia agent that is preying on its injured victims. It has also been proven beyond any doubt that the agent has been designed to make profit and not to assist small business as it is supposed to. Challenges. The reason of this failure is that these government support agencies are too ignorant and unfortunately don't understand how to run the property. They are run by people who have precious little experience of running businesses. This is the most challenging the most challenge that is faced by the SMEs in the parks. Two different management hired by SEFA are the ones that run the show and take advantage of the fact that SEFA have no clue in running the property. The management, which are also based thousands of kilometers away from these parks, only act as rent collectors, while the parks executive committees maintain order and assist tenants with all challenges in their businesses. In other ways, the committees are the ones managing these parks without any remunerations from SEFA, and that is totally unfair. Overcrowding. The parks are overcrowded, and their facilities such as ablutions, water, fire, hoses, etc. become abused. Some people who are friends to others find a place to hang around, tricking or stealing customers from the legal tenants. As a result, people in the township believe that industrial parks are scrapyards or places where crime is committed. Government policy on renting. According to SEFA government, and SEFA policy does not allow people to own units for renting them, so for renting them out, but there are plenty of tenants who rented out their units to more than three or four sub-tenants. Such tenants don't even care about state of the units, just like SEFA. All they are interested is rental fee. Due to this overcrowding, some sub tenants end up working from common areas, causing a lot of pollution in the park. Such owners don't even care about the disadvantages caused by these tenants. SEFA and its management are doing nothing to help solve this problem. Access road and drop-off zone. In Orlando Industrial Park, access road to the park was closed when a freeway was constructed, and customers have to drive around to find a new entrance to the park. The drop-off zone for customers coming to the park is needed, as that also affects businesses and also creates chaos in front of the park. Management and maintenance. The management have shifted their responsibilities to tenants, and that impact to the executive committee's membership businesses, as they time and again have to leave their units to solve problems. These members become victims of unruly lawbreakers who see them as stumbling blocks to their dirty works. Meetings have been forced to be held with SEFA and the management, and resolution taken and promises made, but no action has been taken. Funding. No SMEs we know of that that was able to be funded by SIFA in any of these industrial parks. Marketing. The building structures are dilapidated and need some serious revamping. Their conditions make it difficult to attract customers to the SMMEs because they are more like scrapyards. Assessment and promises from government agencies. The industrial parks have become a center of attraction to government agencies that come and do assessments and leave tenants with high hopes and never come back. Such actions demoralize SMMEs as they are being left with belief that they are being used by these agencies. Opportunities. Government opportunities, including funding, are difficult for SMMEs to access. Hence, the association made a different proposal to some government agencies to see if there can be any solution to that. Tendering. SMMEs in most of these industrial parks are unable to tender due to poor equipment. These days, everything is about technology. In order for one to contest or to deliver good quality product, while also be able to beat the deadline, you better have sophisticated equipment, failing which one will result in outsourcing. Outsourcing then results to skyrocketing of your prices. In other words, it is hard to compete with people who are better equipped than you. Please note that this is the most important area where the government intervention is needed. Training and support. On our side, as tenants in this industrial park, we believe that as we need financial assistance, we should also consider the fact that small businesses need to be assisted on how to access these funds, while on the other hand, be taught on how to generate income to pay back the funds. We also expect to see a difference in the empowerment of SMMEs by Department of Small Business Development and other government departments, because sustainability of these SMMEs should come first. It is so unfortunate that the main focus of this workshop is finance only, but it would have been better if all challenges were to be dealt with, so that at the end of the workshop, we must not find ourselves having created another monster that might lead our small businesses to drown further into debt. Once again, sustainability of businesses is important. GP erecting a fence in Orlando. For years, tenants suffered break-ins and requested SIFA to erect a fence. In 2014, tenants in Orlando West Industrial Park took it upon themselves and approached GEP to erect a fence for the park, which they did. Possible solutions. The parks have lost their identities as formal working places due to influx from illegal business operators, and their dignities need to be restored to attract business for tenants. We need to provide management training to these industrial parks tenants so that they can be able to manage them on their own, and cost to the government will be cut. Overcrowding to be addressed and have all businesses formalized. We need to help SMMEs to be able to purchase better equipment. Assessment of these SMMEs needs and development of tailors made intervention should be conducted. Tenants who are not conducting their business but only renting out their units should be restricted. Business support, intervention, and presentation to SMMEs based at this industrial park should be provided. The required training needs to be to better equip SMMEs at the park should be provided, as well as mentors that are based inside the park to monitor and evaluate the implementation and development after trainings are done properly. We also need to help formalize and ensure legislative compliance of SMMEs in the park. Lastly, we need to contribute towards the improvement of this working infrastructure as these industrial parks are dilapidated. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baloyi. I think honourable members, colleagues, stakeholders, it is very, very clear that the challenges that Mr. Walwe has presented are systemic. They all straddle across the industrial park continuum. Give a very broader perspective. On that note, without wasting time, Chairperson, honourable members, I'm going to take questions for clarity directed to the presentation, and then Mr. Walwe will respond to the question. Honourable September, noted. November, sorry. Before November. November, sorry.
Yeah, just think of Christmas. Then we'll
have thank you.
Thank you. Just a clarity-seeking question is that I've heard that Mr. Baloyi was saying that after 10 years of using the park was given to them. They were now the Ngwanyamas of the park. And if that is like that,
okay.
No, after 10 years, you said, the park was now given to the industrial, the people that were using it, as from the first year. Ne? You said you started in 1981, and then after 10 years, as per description or laws of the municipality of whoever, the park would have given off is given to you after 10 years, so that you be the people that were working. So my question on that would have been that to whom are the rentals going of the tenants that are now hiring the different businesses there within the park? I don't know whether my question is clear.
Okay. Mr. Baloyi, over to you. I hope you get the question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Program Director. I also have Mr. Your permission. I have Mr. Patrick Nishi, who's also here with me, and he's representing the Gauteng Industrial Park Association. So he will be assisting in answering some of the questions. All right. Going back to the question, I need to give clarity first on the issue of ownership. The ownership, the parks were not given to the tenants. It was a promise that was made, when they were recruited from their backyards, that they would be given those units. But at the moment, they still fall under CIFA.
Thank you very much for the question. Any further clarity on the question to augment what Mr. Walwe is saying? In that up, are you okay? Let me note the request by Mr. Baloyi, honourable member, just to augment on what he's saying, just to address the question further.
Yeah,
I hope he directed the same question. I mean, the same answer. Thank you. Then yeah. I'll take honourable chance. Thank you.
Thanks, program director, sir. I think the question of rental payment. The question was, where is rental going to? Or rather, who do we pay to? We pay to CIFA, say. We pay to CIFA, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Baloyi, I'd like to get some clarity on the issue of the property management company, because for some years, J.H. Isaacs Group was the property management company appointed by CIFA to run the parks. But that contract has now expired and it hasn't been renewed, and CIFA has decided to take on management of the parks directly. In your opinion, do you think that CIFA is equipped to manage the parks in the way in which you've described, or do you believe that another organization should be sought and found to assist the parks, both your park and the other ones in Kapipa, to get themselves out of the rut and start to really make progress?
Mr. Baloyi?
To answer the question, we have been managing the parks since when the parks were taken by business partners, SBDC gave them to business partners, or rather, SBDC changed their concept's name to business partners. And after Kula took the parks to themselves or became owners of the park, there was no managing anymore. They hired managing agents. So since then, tenants were managing their own parks. And to answer directly the question, we can manage the parks. We've been doing it for almost 20 years. J.I. Isaacs is not doing anything. They're just rent collectors. And in their reports or emails, they stated that tenants do not want to pay rent, or rather they don't pay rent. And, you know, we asked for steps to that effect, and they're not giving to us. Because in our meetings, in all the meetings at provincial level, we always preach gospel of paying rental, so that our parks are being taken care of in cleanliness and maintenance. So we can manage our parks.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you.
Follow-up question, and I've noted Honorable Mishra.
I just have a follow-up question on that. I think that we need to get a clear answer to the question. Do you believe that if the parks were transferred to you, in other words, that you as the tenants became the owners of the park, that would automatically transform matters and that you would be able to accomplish all the things that you've said on your list? Because it seems to me that whilst you say you're managing the parks are in a state of disarray. So I want to know, do you believe that you need any outside assistance if you were to have the parks transferred to you? Or do you believe that you have the capacity to manage the parks and accomplish all the things that you've said on the board yourselves, unassisted?
No. Thank you very much, Honorable Chance. The Chair is requesting that before I take you, Honorable Mute, with due respect, the Chair is asking you to assist with the question, and then I'll take you. Thank you very much.
Respond.
Thank you. I want to broaden the question and link it to the issues raised by SMMEs across in relation to infrastructure, provision of infrastructure. The portfolio committee visited that industrial park, and we can witness we can be the witnesses that can say it is not a conducive place to do business in. There is overcrowding. There is no adequate support. But the point that I'm going to link the question raised by Honorable Chance to is that there is a policy of the country in relation to the rental stock. I'm now referring to the residential areas. It's a policy of this government which said people that have been living in rental houses were then given title deeds to become owners. Those people who had been living in rental houses for more than 15 years became owners. It's a policy of the ANC government. The question that I want them to add on this, I have made my calculation here. If these industrial parks were built in 1980 and the business people that are occupying them have been renting them for 35 years, if you link that to reducing the cost of doing business and that policy of rental stock, the notion then of making the people that have been operating there becoming owners also in view of the fact that there was originally a commitment made that those parks would be transferred to the people that were using them. My question is not to the representatives of the park. My question is to SEFA. What made SEFA to renege on this policy, the implementation of this policy? Why is it not implemented? I'm asking this question because more than often people would say this government has got good policies, but they are not being implemented.
Thank you very much. And that, Mr. I'm still with you. I haven't forgotten you. Let's wrap this one up based on the question that is put by the chairperson to really get the clarity. I think the past can respond, and then in addition, the CCFA colleagues can also respond to the policy question from the chairperson. Honourable Chance, do you want to say something before we get there?
I just don't want my question to be ignored.
Okay.
I have asked the question and it needs to be answered.
No, thank you very much. Let's deal with Honourable Chance's question and then we'll follow up with the policy question from the chairperson. Then I'll give Honourable Monsieur a chance. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chance. To respond to that question, if you remember on my the possible solutions and the way forward, I raised that small business portfolio committee need to assist to provide management training to these industrial parks so that tenants can be able to run themselves. So in other words, based on what Mr. Ness was saying, We can run those industrial parks, but we also need to be educated on some other areas.
No, thank you very much. We need to move with speed. As I've indicated, is there a response from SEFA? Thank you. Then we'll move on to Honourable Mishe.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Takani Makuba. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of SEFA. I will respond taking into account the rules of the engagement that we shouldn't be defensive as we respond as the chairperson has indicated. But I just also like to indicate that we have been engaging with the associations for the properties in Orlando West as well as for people. And then in terms of the interpretation of the agreement that has been entered into over a number of years. And one of the aspects relating to the agreement was that if the tenants occupy these properties for a period of 10 years and consistently pay the rental, automatically the properties will be transferred to them. So there is an issue around that where there has been a number of arrears with regard to the payment of the rental over the period. But that part we are engaging with the association as to how we can be able to address that part that was a bit of a concern, because the agreement as you interpreted was saying they have to pay for a certain period consistently and then the transfer will then take place.
Thank you very much. Honourable, want to respond further? Okay, shoot please, and then we move on. Well, can I emphasize that, not necessarily Honourable, can I emphasize that there are certain instances where you want to go into detail. There's a section in the program that deals with deliberations. I think there's still an opportunity to go further, to unpack the issues that have been raised by members. That is, follow up and then we move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Program Director. Can I respond to SEFA? I
don't want to make it an interactive,
Okay.
Session,
right.
But if it's, let me give you
that
chance for 30 seconds. Thank you.
All right. It's unfortunate. I just want to make this house aware that we are the areas that SEFA is talking about is the old SBDC areas, and I don't know how the tenants are going to address that issue. Old areas, or should I say, apartheid areas. Thank you.
I suggest that we have a parking lot. Chairperson, just to save time, I suggest that we have a parking lot from the colleagues. We park these issues that we cannot resolve in this very interesting question. So when we get to deliberation and recommendation, they are ironed out going forward. That's a suggestion, Chairperson. I want to, I've noted Honorable Monsieur 10 minutes ago. Honorable Monsieur, thank you.
Chairperson, Mr. among other things, Mr. Maloy said no SME is funded in the industrial park. So my question based on that is whether they have applied and have been turned down. If not, why are they not applying so that they cannot make sweeping statements like not, none of them is being funded?
Thank you, Program Director. Yeah, there are those people that have tried, but like we said, you know, to access funds, you know, from CIFA is very, very difficult. Those challenges, the same issues that were raised yesterday, we also came across the same problem. Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair. On a parting note on this item, thank you.
Yeah. I would suggest that we make a follow-up on this issue and look into this issue in the context of the policy on transferring rental stock to tenants. And we need to make a follow-up on this one.
Thank you very much. Shall we move on in the absence of further clarification question on the item? Honourable members, none? Thank you. Shall we... Oh, sorry. Can you just... Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yesterday, Chair, there was a question, I think it was from Mr. Chance, regarding the industrial parks and the role of the DTI and so on. I see today in our midst there's a gentleman from the DTI here behind me. I'm not sure whether it's by design that is invited because he is in that very same unit that deals with the industrial parks of the DTI. So since we're in this item, I'm not sure that out of order that we also then, you know, it's a clarity seeking question to say that DTI infrastructure rollout, how does it relate to this discussion we're having and CIFA related work as well?
Thank you very much. It is, I think it's important through you, Chair, but I have two suggestions just to make the process flow. We can put it in as a next item on the parking lot and discuss under deliberation for the day, if that's fine. I suggest that we proceed to the next item, which is the SASTA item, Roslyn Nkosi, National President SASTA, or am I not yet ready? Okay, let's proceed to the next presentation that is ready, and that is Mr. Tom Lombard, am I right? Yes, okay, thanks. How about we have a roving mic?
Good morning, gentlemen and ladies. Thanks for giving us the opportunity to come and demonstrate what we are doing and the difficulties we had. We are from TFA Solar, and we manufacture solar items installed to the people to the benefit of South Africa. To my people out there, that's what need what we got. We have developed, we have patented various items, and we have tried numerous times for funding, and with no results. I've got documentation here I can show you. I know how to apply for funding. I did it on the web. I delivered it by hand, make them sign for it, and everything, and it does not work. And I'm not going to blame IDC, DTI, Central Energy Fund, all of them is not working. Finished. There's not even another question for it. But the DTI will also enter to the DFID many, many, many times. We're busy with it 4 years, and in the 4 years, not one positive response. That's finished. I'm not going to say anything more about that. I would like those organizations to support us. This is not a black smear of people or organizations. Without those organizations, this country cannot develop. And it starts right from the kids day at school, 6 years old. We need to develop, grow, teach, learn this country and this work. And gentlemen, I do meet you. Finish. There's no other story for it. I'm not going to go away. I'm like a little bull terrier. I'll bite till it succeeds. TFA Solar, a basic principle using all power solutions designed to develop a power solution for South Africa. To establish an industry for South Africa with high local manufacturing content and local support to all sectors of society. From the poorest to the richest can use our equipment. TFA Solar Energy is basically five business units. The main project, we were battling with funding for that as well, but it is big funding that we require. We required for that project 26 billion rand, and I walk into closed doors in any organization in South Africa. Luckily, I had somebody whispering in our ears, and we got funding from outside. 6 weeks later, the funding is signed. A sealed delivery will happen in the next 2 months. I've got a requirement from that outside source to say, listen, we need 20% of South African participation in that project to make it work. They don't want to take all the risk in the project. Please get South African involvement in it. I started, I sent letters again to DBSA. I got a letter this morning back that no, it's not in our mandate. Development Bank of South Africa. It's not in our mandate. Please see the IDC. So I'm just back in the old big circle again. So in the meantime, I've acquired from Thailand some cement factory for a 10% participation, $100 million. They already sent the approval. I'll sign the documents today. 4 days, gentlemen. 4 years, South Africa. Come. We can't go on like that. I don't know how we're going to do it. I don't know how we're going to solve it. We are here to help. We are here to assist. I can give you all the documentation that we've tried so far. That does not work. Not online, not hand deliveries, not nagging the people. Say, hey, what happened? What happened? Then that guy moved, then that guy moved, then that guy moved. We cannot carry on like that. If I, who is dedicated and determined to get it, can't get it, you people got no chance. I can promise you that. No chance. We have to solve it. I don't know how. Right. The rest of our projects are projects for the people. Solar homes and offer solutions. We design systems for every need that is there. That is for rural housing, that is for... Okay, there's a picture of the plant we're going to build. Next to it is the chemical plant to change metallurgical silicon. There's 3 mines in the world. 2 is in Petersburg, 1 is in Mongolia. We're exporting all the raw materials and we're importing the very expensive solar panels back. So we're going to put up a plant like that, the blue picture there, to take it from metallurgical silicon to pure silicon. Then we take it from pure silicon, we make first the bullets, cut the wafers, make the shells, make the panels, and all material is available in South Africa. The downstream development for the different companies in aluminium, in glass, in everything is tremendous because we've got a very big output. To South Africa and to the world. There's a shell manufacturing line. There's a panel manufacturing line. There's the 4 different stages of it. First you make the wafer, the solar cell, the module, and then it comes to our people's needs. The plant will be erected in the Meyerton's CBD, so again, we've got a very positive Mr. Baloy as the, from the DA as a councillor. He approved the project and support the project totally. On the right-hand side of the highway will be a big solar farm. We applied to Eskom for power for the plant. We need 80 megawatt. Eskom's response back is yes. We will supply with power when we got. a plant can't run like that. So we're going to put up a solar plant to supply our own power to our plant. And also the excess power will be sold to the grid and to CBDN. That's our offices we're going to erect. Job creation just for the plant. I don't even want to elaborate on it. To build a 26 billion rand plant, you all know what's about. Okay, now we go to the downstream things. We have developed for solar geysers, we have developed and patented a new element that you can drive from solar panels. All you have to do is you remove the element, replace it with a dual element, a plated element, connect it to four panels, and you've got hot water for the rest of your life for free. I do not shoot down the systems that you got in the moment. They are glass tubes, they break, they leak. They've got a lifetime of about 5 to 7 years. They are very effective, make no mistake. They work. But they have got no temperature control, they explode on roofs, they burn the people, there's massive claims in against the DTI and on that. Our system is a normal SABS approved system. The elements approved is made by Acton, who made all the elements in South Africa. The installation is very easy, quick. They reckon there's existing 40 million geysers in South Africa, in houses, hotels, workplaces, hospitals, farms, because any person living basically need two geysers, one at work, one at home. So they reckon there's 40 million geysers. If the DTI are busy with that, if they just make that rule that all geysers must be either solar or whatever other technology, if they can just write that in a rule book, that all geysers manufactured in a moment, there's about 50,000 a month between the five different geyser manufacturers, that all geysers must have alternative energy as well, that they supply just that 50,000 random, 50,000 elements a month, just subsidize that with a sticker on the geyser and say, this geyser is solar friendly. Now it's the owner's problem initiative to carry on further. The job creation in that, I think you can imagine for yourself, just to change 20% of them. 50% of them, you're talking a million plus job creations. We just need to change the regulations in the country. Okay? Now the other thing is, that new system that we got designed is just not for making hot water. The solar panels by 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, your water is hot. Then we got a system that changes over, it can charge batteries, it can go to an inverter, it can cool the whole house. Any house you can run off that system has got a dual purpose. The dual purpose is solar energy, hot water, and electricity for the owner. Okay, our next system is based on rural development. We patented a 12-volt solar panel. You do not need a COC for it. It can be stored in any house, any sink, shack, any level of educated person. You can expand the system. It can take up to 4 panels into one system. So it can be used in a house, can be used in a workshop, can be used in a school, can be used in a cooking shop, it can be used in all different things. And you can plug into it your cell phone charge, your everything is available for outdoor living, your ice machine, your fridge, freezer, kettle, whatever you can see on there. We also develop transport. That electric bicycles are charged from the solar system. It gives a person up to 50 kilometers a day, up to 40 kilometers an hour. You don't need a helmet, you don't need driver's license to use that bicycle. It's a normal bicycle with aid. It's got a battery in, got a range of 50 kilometers. If you want to go further, you acquire 2 batteries, and you can go 100 kilometers. On the other end, the charger is built into the bicycle. You just plug it into a plug, and it's charged, and you've got another 100 kilometers you can drive. So it is free transport for all children to get to school, to get to their workplaces, to get to their rugby games, to their soccer games, everything is going on there. Okay? The next system is for rural homes. It doesn't matter what type or size of home that is. It can be a 3 kilowatt home, a 10 kilowatt home, a 15 kilowatt home, a 50 kilowatt factory, a 100 kilowatt factory. We can design and supply to any size what it is. Again, job creation for the three systems, 1 million plus. Gentlemen, I need IDC and VTI to help. We can't do it alone. You want to develop a country? I want to develop it. I need your assistance. Anything else? Yeah, applications, I don't want to blacksmear anybody. We have entered into the job fund, into the rural development, into the green fund, in all of them. And I personally delivered the stuff and got the sign for it. So, gentlemen, somewhere is a big, 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 big flaw. Please help this country. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for a very good presentation. Just to reiterate, to prepare for the opening of clarity question, I think, honorable members, if you look at this presentation, it is a very responsive move, and it provides some form of effective solution to the challenges that the country is facing. I don't have to go into details, and this response to the quest for job creation to address the unemployment, which is part of the triple challenges that the country is facing. And towards the end, you can see the passion from the presenter that we need help, we need assistance from the government and the DIF. On that note, honorable members, this is an opportunity to ask clarity seeking questions to the presentation. Thank you. Honorable Kruger, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I just want to ask, what the role in this whole operation of manufacturing solar panels and different energy sources, what role will small businesses play in this whole process?
So thank you very much. Can we respond to the question? Thank you.
Gentlemen, good morning to you, Mr. Chair, Honourable Chair and Chairman. From our side, basically what we see in the PV sector is where this is rolled out in other places in the world. The big issue comes with PV. Either you buy very expensive panels and the actual industry itself do not benefit from it, or the countries that have been successful with it take the total value chain and they actually base that total value chain on that. What we see in this whole thing, specifically with South Africa, is that rooftops. In the Eskom 2013 IRP, it's estimated for the next 30 years that we will have a 29 gigawatt rolled out on rooftops. Now that is have two opportunities. That rolled out means that there had to be businesses that actually install 5 kilowatt systems throughout that whole spectrum. This is where we believe that small business will really play a big role. But if it is capitalized and given to a few big companies as panels only, we will lose that opportunity. Now, 29 gigawatt, guys, is the total amount of energy that is available from Eskom right now. So we're going to recreate Eskom on rooftops. Eskom, 40,000 people, the ability to recreate this is that amount. The other thing that we believe is very prominent in this is that rooftops, is, it's because it's embedded, it means it's on the roofs of the house. You do not need a network to take the power there. If it is a perfect solution for small rural areas as well, and we see cooperatives as a key. We've identified in our business plan that there's a possibility to set up 3,300 cooperatives to actually roll out this whole, this total network. But remember, guys, it's the manufacturing of the pots. If you look at our rural application, we've gone and did a huge study and saying, first of all, what do people that's out rural have the most need? And that is food. So in our presentation, our basic system is a panel that provides energy to be able to cook 3 times a day. And then what you do from there is you actually provide lights as a second opportunity. And then from there onwards, you take it step by step. But we believe if we're going to put it into the pick and pays and that sort of spectrum, we will lose the opportunity to set up a system that is serviced by that area. That means you service your own market for a change, guys. This is what China is doing. And this is where we believe we should actually learn from. I need to just give you my background, because I'm a little bit Chinese, you just don't see it. But basically, I've worked in Eskom for 34 years. After that, I've been in China from 2002, and I've been actively involved in this specific business and learned from these guys. Guys, that's basically it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chan, then the chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to ask the presenters, first of all, why do you think, if your proposal is so compelling, it has not been funded? I mean, it seems to me like a brain-dead proposal. So why have you been so unsuccessful in getting funding? And secondly, what do you expect from the committee? What do you need us to do to help unblock this problem?
Thank you, Honorable Chan. Chairperson, I've noted your colleague.
Mr. Chair, if there's various reasons. First of all, the main project is just too big. And when we approach IDC with respect to the organization, first of all, they've involved in solar systems. We have an IPP program that addresses farms. A huge amount of capital was spent onto that. And guys, the benefit for industry in South Africa out of that IPP program is only 5.2% of the total value chain of that industry. And for that reason, our concept, we believe, is too different for them to be able to say, listen guys, we would rather do the easy things. Guys, one of the things that we believe, working through all the departments, when we present them, this is what we want to do, is if the officials has one specific issue, they say, guys, it's more difficult for us to convince our peers than saying no to you. Go somewhere else. As we said yesterday, guys, we had to arrange coordination meetings between departments just to be able to have further communication, further dialogue. And for that reason, you know, it's our view, if this committee and small business have a big role to play, and I think it's wonderful to see that happening, but if they do play the coordination role within the departments, we believe that will be a total solution. So, who's going to play the coordination role, guys? We are big business, but we had to coordinate it with co-ops. And we need that coordination function within this committee to be able to help us to put big and small together. We cannot operate as individuals.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think maybe even the issue about funding will also be substantiated by the department and the DIS when I give them chance. Honorable Chair?
Thank you. In the presentation, I see two things. I see the side of the raw material, which is what was presented by Ezulwini Chocolate. They were focusing on manufacturing chocolate, but they needed cocoa to actually manufacture the chocolate. In this instance, we have not, let me talk about myself. I have not seen a model that enables a person who has an RDP house to actually use the roof of the house to harvest energy for personal consumption and also for feeding into the grid. Yet South Africa has got more sun than Germany. And in Germany, households are actually generating income through energy harvesting on solar. And what I see in this model is that there is a manufacturing plant that manufactures panels, which is owned by them. But it then gives an opportunity for a village to form a cooperative and say we have the raw material supplier that is manufacturing the solar panels, who is going to supply us as this village to form our own cooperative of harvesting energy for our own consumption, which will then reduce our cost of living. But then the surplus that we shall have harvested, we will sell to the grid. That is what I see. And for that then to happen, they have to present it to us to see that opportunity for SMMEs and cooperatives. And then for the BFIs to look at that, to fund that part that relates to the establishment of solar energy generation cooperatives in the rural village or in an RDP community. Currently the roof is not used as a source of income, but with this approach the roof of the house can be used as a source of income, but it can also be used as a tool to reduce the cost of living, because you are not paying for energy that you would pay under normal circumstances. The third element that I see is the element of job creation in terms of changing, not changing the whole geyser to replace the conventional geyser with a new solar geyser, but you are changing the element. That is job creation. That is what I see. And I invited them here to present here because I see an opportunity for small businesses, and I also see an opportunity to gear the funding to address that situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On that note, before I take the point, a colleague from this side raised his hand before, and I take it that it's either to succeed or to address some of the things that the presentation raised, and also the issue about the funding challenges that the presentation already raised. I just assume, but you can continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. I wanted to just ask TFS a question, and then maybe get a quick answer and make a statement in response. I see you started in 2012, so are you already manufacturing and supplying and selling en masse the panels and these products listed at the back of this brochure?
Mr. Thompson?
Can I answer it quickly? We are manufacturing everything for the rural development. Manufacturing in South Africa. African material, everything. The panels are not manufactured yet. The plants will only be starting to be built in the next 2 months. It will be a year before we producing solar panels at about a third of the price you importing them from China, and you just importing rubbish from there. I just want to add something else that I haven't mentioned there. If the DTI follows through on the mandate that they got in the moment for geysers to have alternative energies, if they just follow that through, and only 40% of South African geysers are changing to solar, they do not have to build two power stations. I'm not even talking about the nuclear station. They do not have to build two power stations. So much energy will come off the grid.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It was, my follow-up was going to be, already, you know, you've mentioned that there needs to be an integrated approach. Your sits at the top there. Our company is active, and I'm going to be presenting shortly, in the rural agribusiness, and we need electricity. Infrastructure for electricity is one of the biggest problems we have. And our systems, we are busy now trying to get engineers to convert our structures to use solar energy. And we've successfully come up with a solar-powered fencing, but we're looking for local suppliers of the very products that we are having here. So after this meeting, I think we will be also able to collaborate with you and see how we can start, as we roll out our projects, engage with you so we are buying from you. So I think this is one of the good things that we're already starting to see here, that integrated approach, collaborative approach is going to be key to succeed. And I would also want to say that, as the chairperson has alluded, that, you know, if one could find a way, and just following from Honorable Kruger's question, how do the cooperatives and the small businesses benefit? So they can benefit from what the chair said, but I think also finding a way of how your company can assist and be technical partners to break down how this thing works to small parts, so that the cost is not billions. It can maybe start in small success steps and grow, and I think there'll be a lot more buy-in when people see that people in rural areas are actually assisting and contributing in manufacturing, installing, and you are playing a role to project manage and make sure it succeeds. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you want to follow up on that quickly?
Can I answer on this? Yes, quickly. We've got a business plan already in place to run the cooperatives. We do not want to go to pick and pay in ICDC because the product will not get to the people who really need it. Our system works like that. I want the corporate to operate from the real rural in Transkei, in Lobokogomo, in Northern Cape. There must be there between the people. They must install it, that corporate must install it and maintain it. Job creation, money creation, everything from that cooperative. And we've got a plan on the 3,314 constituencies to roll it out in their systems. But we need money and we need government support.
Thank you very much, Honorable Whip.
No, thank you very much for the input. I wanted to find out whether there are already places where these installations have been done in South Africa, and whether the success rate, in other words, the reliability as against the time, maybe you say, you know, it's given a guarantee of so long, just a little bit of information on that. Thanks.
Thank you. And I respond to the questions from Honorable Mabasa. Thank you. Quickly.
Yes, it's already manufactured. Some of them is already installed. Some of them even installed in people from the DOE's house are testing it and make sure everything is working to standards. Everything is SAB is approved. Even a rural system, we've got samples at our place. We haven't got money to run out thousands of them. With those samples, we can show them the water cars as designed for even a kit to pull a water car of 150 liter. This shower is designed, everything is working. But we need more money to roll it out, and we need government assistance to roll it out.
Thank you. I'll be doing injustice if I don't actually deal with the question that was raised, or if I don't find the mechanisms to make sure that the question that was raised by Mr. Honorable Chance responded to from the department side or from the DFI side, because it didn't come out quite clearly in terms of the funding challenges that have been experienced by yourselves. Anyone from my left? Are we well pressed to zoom into those kind of point? I know they have responded, but is there any response from the anyone from the DFI who is aware of receiving applications? Do you want to say something?
Okay, I can tell you what we have done so far to try to succeed. We went to the IBC, we have the DSA system, to get 4 million rand from them to make a diamond to make it operational. They rejected it. We went to the rural development, they rejected it. You wanted a man job, they rejected it. It just disappeared in the system. You never get the answer. It just doesn't happen. Okay. The same happened at the DTI. We had major forms filled in, online filled in, and not any response. I believe after this workshop, it will start working.
No, thank you very much. Honorable Ma, sorry?
Let me follow up then. What are the reasons given for the rejection? But also on my first question, when you said they are installed, they are functional, which places where can we go and see, you know?
Thank you.
The best place to come and see is our premises in Waiteville. You're welcome. Everybody is welcome to come and see it there. I've got the system installed in my own house. I had it installed in my own house, tested it, and I took it out already and installed it again because of money, of cash flow. But the systems are available. Please come and see for yourself. We can demonstrate for you. We can show you it's working. And the majority got SABS stamps on it. So it is an old story. I need funding. In 4 years, I could not get funding.
Just to add to that, we can provide a list of where it has been installed already, okay?
Follow up, Honorable Witt. Oh, the second question, Honorable Witt.
Sorry, just repeat the question.
Yeah.
The question was, as you have approached a number of possible funders, and they have all declined to fund, what reasons have they given?
Can I maybe just answer on that as
well,
please?
Are you taking the answer?
Yeah, take it just from me.
Okay.
In most cases, we didn't fit the profile of the actual fund for some other reason, guys. We've applied for innovation, and we were rejected because it was not innovative enough. It was a world patent, and it ran right through the whole world, but it wasn't innovative enough. In other cases, with the DOE, for instance, we didn't fit the profile of the possible grants because the system didn't work on hot water and the profile didn't fit. In the IDC, most of the times the IDC actually responded was that the money was enough. They've actually invested in 4 companies in PV already in the IPP program. And out of that, 2 companies actually folded for that reason. They would not like to invest in that. So these are the basic reasons that we've had that actually just come through. What we need to say to you, the biggest issue that we've had was no response. In fact, the online programs that we filled in, to get a number back from them, a registration number, eventually we were given a fake number in one of the department's guys, just to get rid of us. This is really what we bow our heads and say that, listen guys, we could not comment because of most of the times we did not get responses. Unfortunately, that's the issue.
So thank you very much for the response. You want to follow up on that one, then we'll close the issue because you need a break for tea. Thank you.
Sorry, the proof of that is on the table there with Ms. Bengu. There's line there of all the things that they try to approach, nothing has happened. Nothing. Thank you.
On that note, thank you very much. This item also, I think it qualifies to be in the parking lot to be discussed under the afternoon deliberations, because it's quite a key issue that this forum or this workshop need to deal with to assist with the process going forward. That will be the suggestion, Chair. On that note, the tea is ready outside. Coffee and tea is ready. We need to break for 10 minutes. We have to be back at least by 20 past 11 to continue with the remaining presentations before lunch. Thank you very much. Let's be back at 11:20. Thank you.
Nick.
Can we please get seated? I'm informed that SASTA is ready to present. I will ask you to come to the podium in a while, in a second now. You know, when you go to conferences, to seminars, to workshop, I've been told or been educated to the point that solutions to issues that are discussed in the workshops are provided during tea breaks, which people take as an opportunity to engage further beyond, or take what was discussed inside and take it further and come up with solutions. And if it happens like that, please bring them back in the session. Okay? Because I see what we have tea, there's lots of discussion, and I like it. It's very important. But let's make sure that those brilliant ideas, those the thinking that comes out of there when you are relaxed, you can bring it back to the session during the deliberation session. There's also a very nice item before we take the item on SASTA, and I'm going to leave that item, and I'm going to ask honorable members and colleagues to follow me on that item. For a change, I'm going to wear a different hat now, and most of you will be surprised. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear. Happy birthday to you. Thank you. Today is the chairperson's birthday, so we felt that we need a little bit of relaxing moment and a comic relief to wish her a very happy birthday and many more years to come. Thank you, chairperson. On that note, I'm
thank you very much.
Will she declare the presence?
Yes, I'm 63 years old.
We are ready now. We have
a lot of experience.
We're not doing that best in terms of time. As part of my role, it's always something that one wants to maintain, to make sure that we do things timely, and that pressure to move fast. But I'll slow down. But at the same time, please, let's together work together. Cooperate to make sure that we stick to time in terms of what is allocated. May Roslyn Nkosi, are we ready? Not yet. Oh, we're not yet ready? Then we'll move to the next item to give them time to prepare. Oh, but we are ready. Okay, no, that's fine. 30 seconds to prepare. Thank you. Oh, it is this thing that is coming back again today. Oh, no. Yeah, this... Can I check with honorable members? Do we have a handout for this one so that we can refer to... I think, okay. So we have no choice then to wait, honorable members, for the machine to be fixed. Productively using the little time available when we are fixing it, I was informed by the colleague from the DTI that you won't be able to be with us to assist or to engage on that parking, the issue that is on the parking lot for the deliberations. then you will actually request that at some point during this session before lunch, we zoom into that and we exhaust it. So I've requested to that, I've acceded to that request, and then we will at some point during the session go back to that issue. It is the issue around the industrial parks and the role of DTI that was raised before that has never been. Yeah, that's fine. With that, I think, Honorable Chance, I think we can open it up so that we close it. That is what I was trying to come to. I thought maybe we'll be here, we can do it before lunch. Given that we'll be leaving now, it will be very important and worthwhile to exhaust it, because the people who are concerned about that is members of parliament, and the person who can assist will be leaving. So I'm going to suggest, Chairperson, that let's go zoom into that one, allowing Mayor Nkosi to relax and prepare his presentation as he's ready. But through you, Chairperson, I suggest that we go to that issue that was in the parking lot for deliberations and get into it. I think we can restate the issue, we can restate the matter, and then allow the colleague to assist the session to deliberate on that matter. It was about the industrial park and the role of DTI, as it was raised by Honorable Chancellor before. I think we can deal to that. I don't know if you want to restate it so that it gets a new perspective, and then the colleague can really engage on that matter. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chancellor. Yes, thank you very much. I yesterday asked a question relating to a workshop that was conducted by the DTI, where afterwards it was announced that the DTI was going to spend 80 million rand redeveloping these parks, which raised a number of questions which I asked the minister yesterday, and the answer was yes, even though the parks supposedly belong to CIFA, which falls under the Department of Small Business Development, it was DTI that was going to undertake the work. The minister said because we didn't have resources in our own department to do it. But then I asked the question of the Orlando West Industrial Park people last week when I found out about this. Did they know anything about this workshop? No, they did not. So why have a workshop to, you know, develop or to discuss the redevelopment of the parks, and you don't even invite the tenants of the parks? It doesn't make sense. So I'd like to get answers to this question, please, from the DTI and see what they have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Over to you, sir, and then we proceed in that session. Thanks.
Good morning, and thank you for you, Chair. Thank you, colleagues as well, and honourable members. I think let me just give you a quick perspective on the background of the workshop that took place. The DTI was mandated through a directive from the presidency to revitalize the old state-owned industrial parks across the country. So we were, I think, actioning on that call that was made. The first thing we did, we involved the DFIs, because nationwide, I'm not talking necessarily about Gauteng, but I'll come and zoom in into the Gauteng perspective in this case. But we invited all of the provincial DFIs. You know that in Limpopo we've got LIDA, in Eastern Cape we've got ECDC, and of course in the municipalities they are also broken down into various cooperations or development agencies. What we then did was to profile those parks which were sort of priority in their economic development or growth plans of those provinces and municipalities. We looked at those ones. We haven't at this stage sort of approved any of the applications, but we have done the mapping and scoping of those. We have prioritized that they need, according to the deliberations and the outcome of that workshop, was that most of them would are struggling with issues of basic infrastructure, which is your fencing, because of security. Others have got their roof tops being dilapidated, and some would struggle with issues of roads. Also, the background to this is that through our critical infrastructure program, we have been receiving or assisting private owned industrial parks, but these were industrial parks that were motivated by overseas investors and other big companies, multinationals, who would see opportunities in the sort of established metropolitan areas. But the issue was, in these pockets of townships and rural development, you have a lack thereof. If we can make an example, in this state you have Buchabelo, you have Nkwakwa, you have Butabichaba. They are quite high employers and companies there that are involved. But unfortunately, the state of the parks themselves is at a very bad state. Of course, because these were motivated by the old system of the Bantu stand, and all of them, these are the ones we're focusing on now, to try and sustain those jobs that are there. There are, why we did scoping and open of these, to make sure that from our support package that we'll develop, we are just not supporting industrial parks that are just there or simply because it's a call from the presidency to do so. But it was to have a business case for each and every one of them. Most of them, their occupancy level is around, I'm just giving you an average here, it's around 60-70%. There are those few, of course, which have got a very bad, of course, occupancy rate. And one of the things that was the outcome of the workshop, of course, was the issue of location, location, location. The reason we know, because most of these were just a sort of a dumping place at one stage for cheap labor and for keeping people from coming to other well-developed areas. So, but as a DTI then, we have contracted largely with all of the DFIs, with some of the municipalities and not all of them. We are going to be doing another engagement with the municipalities because they are the critical partners to this rollout. We extended invitations to all the provinces, including Gauteng. Gauteng was represented, City of Joburg was there in the workshop, and they did give an insight or input with regards to some of the industrial parks in Gauteng itself, and that would include your Orlando and your Pennyville. So that's the perspective of the workshop, and that's why we did the workshop just in the background.
Thank you very much. A follow-up on that, Honorable Chan.
Thank you very much for that summary. I'd just like to know why you decided not to invite any of the tenants of these parks.
Thank you.
I think at this stage, because we are developing a framework, there's a lot of gap with regards to the practices and standardization of these parks across the country. So we have, as DTI, engaged the tenants of Orlando West, as an example, or Soweto. Their needs are different to the ones in the Western Cape. They are also different to the ones in KZN. So we couldn't invite, because we have got to consider the cost implications thereof. But I'm saying, with the scope of what we had to discuss and discussing the issues of policy, we are going to engage further with all of the stakeholders that are involved in these industrial parks. And of course, also when we talk of issues of collaboration with other departments, with other DFIs as well, we have came up with that resolution, but we still this forms part of our action items going forward, because this was the first engagement or workshop of this kind.
Thank you very much. Chairperson noted. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the perspective, but I'm still of the view that we will need to make a follow-up on this under the topic of infrastructure, access to adequate infrastructure. Out of the 5 points that we raised, I said today we are only dealing with one, finance. And we will be taking all of the 5 topics one by one. We have dealt although not in a workshop form, with access to market. The portfolio committee has in the past invited the retail sector to understand where they are, what is the size of the market, how they implemented the 30% procurement from SMMEs cooperatives, and how they implement the 70% local procurement policy. It's a continuous engagement. The focus today is on the relevance of a financial instrument that we have, which are designed to assist SMMEs and cooperatives financially. That's what we are discussing. But because we have invited people that are affected by a number of issues, and also that as a portfolio committee, we have undertaken a visit to these areas, and we have also engaged with the sectors that would raise these issues. We were not going to then not engage on the issue of the industrial park, particularly the issue of the ownership of it. So I am saying let us wrap this matter. It's still on our agenda, because even after they have been revamped and renovated, we will still have to discuss the issue of ownership policy in the context of reducing the cost of doing business and also providing SMMEs and cooperatives with adequate infrastructure. Can we close this matter?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair, for that suggestion. I think the matter is closed for now to be deliberated at a later stage. We're now ready to move to the FASTA. I just want to make a point on the program, point out a correction on the program. It says the status of Spaza shops and taverns. It's incorrect. It's supposed to say Pub Shops Association. So on that note, we apologize for that typo error. The chance is yours. You have 15 minutes to take us through the presentation, which will be followed up by clarity-seeking questions. Thank you, ma'am.
And again, I would love if you could correct, because when I read something from my computer, there was something that came from you saying Rose Ntali or Tali, something of the kind. I did not know where you came with that surname. It's Rose Nkosi. Thanking you for the day, and Mr. King Kunene and your committee, whereby you sat and realized that really you could not find me, but I need to be part of this day today. I thank even the government, who has made a point to see that we speak with you face to face, because most of the days and times we've been speaking to officials left and right, but things not happening. I thank the day of today. Honoring again our lady who is our chairperson, that is her birthday today, Amanda Mbogoto, and then age is wisdom. Ngizathi our presentation to the portfolio committee on small business, and then as SASTA, I will give you the SASTA background. The South African Spaza and Tax Shop Association, as SASTA in short, is a non-profit organization and community development business association that currently has more than 3,000 members countrywide in South Africa, with most concentration in Gauteng. SASTA background, we continue in this way. SASTA members are people who own informal micro retail business located in cities, small towns, taxi ranks, townships and rural areas. These include, amongst others, hawkers, street traders, home-based retailers like Spaza Shop, etc. Most of these businesses are the sole source of income for them and their families. They provide a valuable service to their communities. They provide jobs that are much needed in the country. The sector is not seen as an economic player, yet it contributes about 6% and 8% to the GDP of the country, and it accounts for about 15% of employment, according to the state. Now, but as far as that, they are not supported as whatever. I cannot say as supposed, but as whatever. And if they can just shut, tell me or explain how many people that will be out of jobs, and can you as a government be able to help that or create those jobs for those people? Meaning that we have tried, we have done something very well and good for you, so because these people have created their own jobs. The legal and regulatory environment is not user-friendly to the sector. The bylaws that are not responsive to the sector. We need protection of local trade from foreign invention. This is our bread and butter. Assessing funds for stock, equipment, etc. is a problem for informal traders. It seems they are not taken seriously. It's difficult to know where to find the offices for grants and loans for the sector from government agencies and the private sector. Infrastructure for trading is a problem, e.g. toilets, storage, facilities, etc. We need skills to run our businesses successfully and for future growth. And mind you, these skills that we are asking for, we don't want people to come, structure to say, we are training. Then they get money from SICA, then they come and train our people, just a little petty training that is not rightful. We need them to be trained within the SASTA organization, and we get facilitators that are well trained to train our people rightfully. Organization sustainability is a challenge. E.g., we use youth volunteers, not getting paid. We need computers, it connectivity, etc. We are using our private house that was converted. It was me also who had to get this house and be able to convert it to an office because we are paying out of our own pocket. Using our private house that was converted to be the head office, which is called the very headquarter, but it's a private house because we could now not be able to be able to pay. We come from NAFCOC, where you say NAFCOC would have, I remember the years of Utoliga Mnube, who was the Department of Development at the days of our Honorable Babu Mbeki, who called us to see that how can they. You know, we've been in and out to all these big organizations. Oh, Babu Mbeki, I say, I don't know why did you have to move, because you were the only helping hand to these little. But then he moved, and then there was nothing that was helped, but they were writing, I think, reports to say, we are helping this small little business and what, and then they would be giving whatever they are giving, because we don't know, but the way we saw things happening to their side. But when it comes to our side, nothing at all, even a cent, we were striving. Imagine, this is the 16th year where we don't even have a little something from the even the development of social grant, you know, 100,000, maybe 100 rand, not at all. Buying in bulk or collectively is a challenge. We need support for our own warehouses, distribution channels. Private sector retail giants need to be contribute to our efforts. We need to buy stock from Tiger Brand so that our markup is so little. People must not run away for us because they say we are so, you know, costly. Our items are over. We want to buy in bulk from Tiger Brands, Massmart, etc. But where do we get the amount of money to be able to buy that? Now the question will be, we've got this decentralized access to finance, let the services of SIFA. I would just question maybe SIFA and say, SIFA, do I need or do we need to be in your board to be able to get this fund? Because at some stage we had some discussion with a certain gentleman that I won't be saying his name yet. Just talking, you know, talking. And yet I'm picking something here. Who then said, so-so is one of the board of their SIFA company, who has been given as an organization the funds to be able to help whoever is that one is helping, millions, if I may talk about that. So now I want to know, should I be part of the board so that my organization and the people that I'm serving should be helped and supported? Should that be accessed by the people closer to them through trader associations and develop grants for the sector, for both individual traders and group-based cooperatives, so that we can be strong and grow? We don't want just to be little spaza shops or little pavement stalls. We are doing that because we don't have any. It's a job creation for ourselves. It's a living for our children. But we want to grow. We want to see ourselves becoming big stores. And there we can cooperate, because we trust ourselves that we can cooperate ourselves in this fashion, that we can be strong and grow. Assist us with infrastructure to build our own warehouses, central distribution, buying capabilities, our own hyperstore. E.g., look at Plaza. Plaza started selling on the ground. Those Indians were selling, but at last they realized they need to come together and be able to have a very beautiful store whereby a little business person is selling washing racks, another one pots, another. But it's a smart building where other people also support. We also support. Most people go and support to buy from them. Why can't we have our own? We are not talking of malls that have, you know, being at all our locations where there is, I'm sorry, but it's like that, white, big shops that have been there for ages and ages and ages, warehouse. We don't even have shares in those malls. We want our, I've been saying this, African mall that will be able to take whoever is our small business. Our proposal. We are calling for the speedy implementation of the departmental national informal business upliftment strategy. I'm from pillar to post. I see guys here. DPI, you know me. I can name you. And I've been coming to you to say help, help. National Informal Business Upliftment Strategy. NIBAS, I've been with them as a strategical advisor. The Vuvuzela, that tells you where it comes from, down group, from the ground, up, until I was with them, you know, discussing, you know, we went from pillar to post to brief people from A up to Z, all provinces, with them. But now, as we participated in its development as president, I was part of the national task team, please put resources. Because I keep on saying, Hikers, Low, Stephen Low, what's going on? Budil, what's going on? Because you said, the minute this is done, you will then support. But they said, there's no funding for the department to implement this strategy. Oh guys, support and help. And I've got the belief that as a woman who is a leader in this, something is going to happen. Do it. And show them that you are the woman. You can prove that women in Bogoto, ihlangene, iblomeli ihlangene, malizovuleka lithi uzobona umsolo. Let the department implement the chamber support program. It's promised so as to build capacity for informal trader organizations. Develop partnership between local and foreign traders. We are currently working with the Township Business Development South Africa, TBDSA, which is comprising of Somalians, Ethiopians, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. We are looking at skills transfer, group buying, etc., because we realize that these people are clear in business models of theirs. Not saying that we are not, but the way they are doing things, people are supporting them. When they are gone, we say, hamba, hamba, they hamba. Then when we are left, we don't have stock, we don't have, rather let us call them. And to my thanking God, they listened to the call that I called. I said, guys, let's sit down. Let's stop fighting. We are the creation of God. Let us see how we can work together and be able, even these big stores that we are talking of, meaning that African Mall, there is a part where we say, together we will make it, whereby you will be running maybe the bakery if you are skilled in that, the other one, fruit and veg, the other one, clothing, the other one, because we've got different business people of our small in the spaza shop. If I talk of spaza shop, don't just think of spaza shop as a spaza shop. Others are doing certain other different businesses, baking, cakes, whatever, garments, sewing at home, going out, selling. They are our members, some catering. It's a lot of different businesses. So we are saying, this will help to show that now together we can be able to do something that the world can be so, you know, proud of. And we are saying, before I close, we are saying, again, support our organization by helping us to have, whether it's not a pool car, something of a, is it a van or a buggy, that will help us to go about briefing people that we have come together with other nations that are in South Africa to work as one, to be able to do good things that they have and they know. And others are saying, we've got mangoes that you can bring and then produce, you know, juice that could go to your stores and be able to be processed. So we are saying, gentlemen, ladies, please, those that are having those funds that are having, please bring it out. Let us see that something can change the South Africa to be better. A South African of tomorrow, unlike our children now smoking nyawupe. It is enough. You can make some change. Change it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for a very good presentation, candid and more than candid. I've noted you, honourable member. Honorable Minister as well, and Honorable Witt, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Marose, for that bright vibrance. It shows that there is passion. Really, we can do this thing. Just a small question. Is it only the Gauteng that we are talking about now, or have you got branches at other provinces? Thank you, Chair.
Can I respond directly to Honorable November? Yeah.
Yeah. It's all provinces. The problem is, as I said, we need a support from you. To do the roadshows is not a charge day. From pillar to post, it's money. As I'm here, I had to try to see that you do something. That is why I'm here. If not, I wouldn't have come. So now, it's all profits, but we need your support because other structures are like dead because we can't come and say, now we've got 1, 2, 3. So far, how far are you? So because of that, it is why we say, roadshows, support us so that we are able to go there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mishwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Rale Bomaros, two small questions.
He said you need protection of local trade from foreign invasion. What form of protection do you envisage that to be? Or what do you mean by this protection that you need?
Can I answer?
Second. Again, the second one, you said buying in bulk is a challenge. Can you elaborate on that? When a person buys from macro and metro, is that not in bulk, or what do you mean by this challenge? Thank you.
Thank you. Nangosi, you may respond. Thank you.
Protection, I'm saying the bylaws. The bylaws are not doing their work. The bylaws are supposed to check if people are comply. Are they registered, those people that have taken spaces in our houses as other shops of other nation, people? Are they rightful to be in the country? That is not checked, because themselves, Ahmed said it straightforward to the department. He said there's no bylaws here. We are doing as we see. We came, we started trading, no one questioned. Now, SASTA and whatever, there are questions. So on that note, the bylaws to check if people have trade, because if I may remember closely very well, on the 14th of March when we were at Umtata, Honorable Minister Rob Davis said every person now should register the business, whether she's selling a sweet, so that Mamros, I should know who are the people that need to be supported and are South African business people. Then buying in bulk, what I'm talking, we've been trying like sort of a stock sale. The other one brings 10, 20, 30, 40 rand and then 100. Then we collect this money together. Then we go and buy. But by buying to macro, we are not helping it. Macro is a retail store, is a shop on its own. Macro goes to the supplier and buy from a supplier with a lot of money, like Pick and Pay, like ShopRite. I was also long years, those years, an ambassador at Pick and Pay. They buy in bulk. So now, what we are saying, with 20 rand, 100 rand, 3,000, 4,000, what can you say? Tiger Brand won't even listen to you. We want to buy from Tiger Brand. We want to buy from a food corp, suppliers, direct from them, bring it back to our central place and warehouses that are owned by us as, an organization, so that when we share, the prices become so low when we put our markup. That's how, that's what we are. We've been crying and crying and crying. No one takes that seriously.
Thank you, Mngosi. Honorable Whip, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Because it's a number of questions, but that are very related, I'm not sure whether I should pose all of them so that Mngosi notes them, or whether I should ask for an opportunity to hit them one by one. They are sub questions. Will I get guidance?
No, thanks, Chair. If that's the case, the tradition has also been that we just post all the 3, 4, 5 questions,
okay,
and then they are noted, and then the respondent deals with them at once. Thank
okay.
you. You may proceed, Chair.
Okay.
I mean,
my first question is from the name. I do not read the street vendors. So my question is, why is the name not inclusive of street vendors? Loya mama loyana uthengisa amatamati awayi 10. ne khabishi eseyishiswe ilanga kayi 3 kayi 4 days. Or who doesn't even have an umbrella, she has a tent which is torn. So the name doesn't tell me that they are members. Then the second question is, are your members registered? When I say registered, I mean in two respects here. Are they registered with SASTA? And are they registered with the department as articulated by Minister Rob Davies when he said it's important that we as government know who are the members, you know, who is staying where. So a body that's presiding over these members, are they registered in these two respects? And then, how organized is SASTA? Do you yourself get a feeling that you are well organized? Do you get a feeling that you can confidently say, Viva SASTA! Or you can only say, Viva SASTA! So, and how do you relate? Because when we speak of street vendors, we also now have those street vendors that originate, that are South Africans. And we also have those poor African street vendors that are coming from neighboring countries. Do you have a relationship? How does SASTA see these two groups? In the same way you talked of spaza shops wanting to relate to the shops that are foreign owned, when it comes to the street vendors, have you thought of that? How do you see the, what is the present situation, and how do you see the future? The last one, you spoke very well about Plaza, how it was established. Why has SASTA not established its giant Plaza the way Plaza has been established? I'm apologizing that there are a bit many.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Whip. I think the questions are very straightforward and precise, so over to you, ma'am. Respond to those questions. Thank you.
The other one you said, street vendors, why the organization does not reveal that they represent. The naming could have been too long, but if you go through our constitution, that was done in 2000. It states that the organization represents pavement stalls. Pavement stalls stand for people that are on the street. Then, you then questioned the registration. Our people are registered. I will tell you that if GAP, Gauteng Enterprise Propeller, is here, they would witness that, because there was that time when I had to visit them to say, "Hi guys, this is enough. Can't you give us even a chance for people to be able to buy? We are struggling. Look what is happening." Then they said they need members to be registered. They were registering also them in Gauteng Enterprise Propeller with 170, then they go and fetch their certificate, they from APSA, they put money into APSA, they are registered. They visited our other shop because they said database. I gave them. When I gave them the database themselves, they went without me. to those people to find out is Mama Rose still telling the truth or not. They were satisfied. Pumin Debele said, you know, I don't know what I can say to you, Mama Rose. When are you doing this all the time? I said, my time. It was just that. It's Papa and Nama and Sit. So now, he found that it's done. Then that's when they gave them 9,000. But how many? 10. So 3,000 minus 10. How many left? You get my point. It was because they saw that my members are registered. So now they started giving them, not the organization, them as people of the father. In which way? They had to write the items they want to sell in the shop. Then they will give that, and then from there, they will tell, because they said, Mambos, because this amount is little, what we need to do, let's talk to Macro and ask Macro to give maybe a discount of 200 or 100 rand per this 9,000, so that the people can be able to put their markup. But I said, still it's not enough, because this is not right. But because people say, help us, then they did that. The quotation was given to Macro quotation by a other person. Then Gap will then pay Macro, FNP Macro, and then the stock will then be delivered to that particular shop of that person. I'm trying here to clarify the registration to prove that our people are registered. Then the department, yeah, and then you ask if the department was, you know, so now Gap, as I'm explaining that, Gap is my witness that he went, he saw the people, but I've got a very serious question to say, Gap, you guys can, how about those other thousands that were not given, because it's like you set up a precedent. Now what? Because they say, why, Mamru, your families, what's going on? We're still waiting. So now, by saying well-organized, we are well-organized, guys. But the thing is, organizing yourself out of your pocket. How much? Until when? Then you've got nothing yourself. That is why I'm crying if I want to go somewhere to say, I've got nothing now. And help me, guys, because I've been giving. And it's finished. And what? And then, you said, how do we relate to the poor African people that come from other sides? We relate in the way of saying, street others. We had groups like, if you can go to Joburg, I don't know wherever you have your case. I think there are 47 to 67 chairpersons. Those, even the late Nkosi Mpendulo, even said, how God, how many of you are like this? That's the street is chairperson. So it's like, control your space, check your space, then report to Sam Kasibe. Then Sam Kasibe will let me know whatever. Then we realize that we need to have a group that will, you know, run on its own and run. When they need our help, it's fine. But let them run its own, because they are like that. Otherwise, we won't finish. And the others, we found that they are doing certain things that are not supposed to be done. So let us leave them to do it and feel free. It's the freedom. So let the freedom be given to them. And then you said, why are we not a giant plaza? My fellow brother, you are not supposed to be asking that question. Because how can you ask this question, yet I was saying, we need funds to do that. So the group of those people, you see, who are they? They are Indians. They are like the very Pakistan that we are saying, oh, my friend, come here, because I can see that as if you've got that little cent. Maybe that little cent of yours will help me when we are together to form a cooperative and have that something that the government should support. You heard me when I said, high power of ourselves, but these people that are Somalians, or whatever, because they are there, they are doing it. they will come and say, you know, when we do our bakery, we do it that way. And then we say, okay, this bakery section, all the fruit and veg, this fruit and veg. But in one house, all the garment clothing, okay, the hardware, okay, but together with them. Because it seems as if they've got the little, because their stores are so full. Where do they get this money from? Us, we cannot. How can we? I don't tell a person of your kind to be asking me such a question, yet I say we don't have. I thank you.
Thank you very much for the response. I hope, Honorable Witt, you take it nicely and sweetly and lightly the way it's coming to you. We have to follow up Honorable Witt, and then I'll take Honorable Chair to pose her question. Thank you.
Yes. No, I must just clarify, Mama, that when I ask a question, I'm asking so that our understanding becomes the same. That's the reason. And when I ask a question, it doesn't mean I'm against you or the organization. You may find I'm asking the question because I like the organization. It's possible. So it's not a negatively motivated question. It is a question that makes me to have more knowledge. So that when they say, what do you know about SASTA? I mustn't assume. I must be able to represent you eloquently. That is the reason, ma'am. But the last follow-up question is just numbers here. But let me ask this question, ma'am. Where do you stay? Yes.
I stay in Soweto.
Where in Soweto?
I stay in Meadowlands.
Good.
I used to be at Badlu. But Badlu, I realize it's not the kind of place.
No, you've answered me properly. Then let me make a follow-up question. Kunabo mama lava, unfortunately, kuvamise ukuthi kube abo mama. Nabo baba baba khona. But kakhulu kuvamise ukuba abomama laba abathengisa emapavementini nalabayana abathengisa edube estation. How many, angikhulumi ngalaba bamasiphaza kakhulu, ngithageta kakhulu laba abasemapavementini, laba abathengisa amazambala isaka eliyi-1 ngisho nekhabisha wayi-3. How many in Meadowlands are the members of SASTA? That's the one question. And then the last question, when they join SASTA, what is the definition of joining? Does it mean they contribute something financially or otherwise to become members, or they just join without contributing anything? Just those two questions. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Whip. Two questions, ma'am. Okay. Answer them, thank you.
Dube, if you go to just opposite ShopRite, there is a lady by the name of Ndombi. The lady is the one taking care of the people that are trading there. They are our members. Others are doing hair, whatever you call it. And for them, they contribute because a membership was like, we were looking at a person has nothing. So how can he be able to pay monies that are huge? They used to pay 250 a year, meaning that's 20 rand per month. But the very 250, can you believe that? Others are saying, your mom goes, we cannot. He pays maybe 50 rand or 20, and then he says, I will pay the time when I do have. And we don't follow that much because it is said they don't have. At the end, it's just that we've got their membership form because they feel members, and I am going to help you, not saying that by questioning you that I mean to say you are targeting me in some way. I'm also a person, you know, who likes to just speak to make the place, you know, a little bit vibe, you know. And then, yes, I will show you the particular paper so that you can go through even the business model of our article for the organization. I saw them because I wanted to prove something here to say, look at the organization that was so well structured up until now, but it has nothing to be supported with. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't think you've answered the question on the numbers. The numbers. The question was the size of membership in Midolands.
The question was, in Midolands, how many of Labo Mama Lava ama pavement sellers, laba bathengisa ngale ndlela bengichaza ngayo, how many are the members of SASTA? Just in Midolands.
In Midolands, ngizothi, they are not that much, maybe it's 3, maybe it's 4, maybe it's 7, maybe it's 20. Angibabali kangako, but the office ngizobacela bakuthumele, ungishiyele ilento imfanelo zakho bazokuthumela. But kakhulu kakhulu basedoptionville, uyabona mawuqeda i-rank yasemidolens uya ngathi uya lapho edoptionville, kuleyo ndawo nje enkulu umuntu ongibhekele lapho ulento uMike. Edoptionville, it's a lot of them because abanye baloku bayangena ngicaba ukuthi bahluphekile besebabhalisa ke ukumike uMike alethe ile. Ngizakhetha nje mhlambe ngithi it's roughly to about 200 abantu abathengisa lapha edoptionville. Yes, but baphansi uMichael uyo ongibhekele bona because I've got checks in.
No, thank you very much. May you supply that information to the committee secretariat to assist the committee in actually responding to that community in this regard. I've noted, Honorable Chair and a colleague at the back to follow the to be next, and the colleague next to me in that order. Thank you. Sir? And then we'll close the discussion Thank you.
I just wanted to remind the participants in this workshop that the main issue that we need to be interrogating is the relevance of the funding instruments to the needs of SMMEs and cooperatives. Those are the main questions that we should be asking here. Having said that, I want to give a definition of what a cooperative is, to relate that to what was presented by Mambos when she says we need our own warehouse and our own distribution channel. A cooperatives are organized people with organized material and financial resources that are collectively used against exploitative monopoly capital in order to advance the well-being of the people. Well-being in this sense meaning to advance social and economic condition of those people. That is what a cooperative is. We will further engage on that. But I want to then point out that in this meeting, there are three very important groups that have played a very important role of providing services, employment, and economic development to communities that were excluded from the economic mainstream by the apartheid government. And I'm saying that because we should be mindful of the phase that we are at in terms of our transition. We are at a phase of transforming the economy. That is where we are at. And we are not even saying we are transforming the economy in a normal way. We are saying radical economic transformation, meaning that we have to do radical things. We have to change in a radical manner. In the manner in which we have been doing businesses, in the manner in which we have been providing services, we have to change and do things differently. What are these groups that I'm talking about? It's the Kings of Midlands from the taxi industry. Others should not be feel that they are not important, but I want to illustrate here the difference from a capitalist approach in development and a cooperative approach, socialist approach to socio-economic development. The Kings of Midlands are from the taxi industry. Nasasa is representing Stokvels. Southstar is representing the spaza shops and tax shops. The question that I would want to ask to all of us seated here, including myself, do we think that we have done enough to respond to these three groups? Do we think that our funding is geared to develop these three giants who have sustained themselves through the dark days of apartheid without any support, when there is now a government that is saying we are going to transform the economy? Do we think that the instruments that we are providing are actually targeting these people? Have we developed Nasasa to become a cooperative bank in South Africa? Or do we have a strategy to develop Nasasa to become a cooperative bank in South Africa? Because Stokvels provide loans to people who were denied loans by the commercial bank. Do we have an instrument or a strategy to develop, to build on the experience that the Stokvels have in South Africa? Do we feel that we have, in the past 20 years, assisted the taxi industry to move it from being consumers of cars, fuel, tires, insurance policies, and all the things that they are currently consuming? Do we feel that in our funding model for SMMEs and cooperatives, there is something designed to develop the taxi industry from being a consumer of goods to becoming the provider? They provide themselves with those services, meaning that the money that they generate would rotate within. Have we done that? Do we have a strategy? Do we see the taxi industry that transports on daily basis more than 65% of public transport users? Do we have an instrument here that speaks to their needs? The third question that I want to pose here, do we feel that we have a strategy and a funding model that speaks to what Mount Rose has presented? And if we had an understanding of the role that was played by the spaza shops and the tax shops during the apartheid era, and they continue to play here in providing the service in areas where town planning did not leave a space for a shop, but they took it upon themselves to provide a shop in a form of a garage, without any support, do we feel that the instruments that we have as DFIs are geared to enable the spaza shops and the tuck shops to have their own warehouses and to have their own manufacturing plants. Do we feel that we understand the cooperative contract in that manner? That the 3,000 members of the spaza shops could actually own warehouses and they could also own factories that are producing the goods that will be distributed through the warehouses. If Tiger Brand can process tomato into a tomato shelf, there is nothing that would prevent spaza shop owners to act. There is nothing that can prevent the spaza shop owners to produce their own tomato sauce. When we have co-workers seated here that can train people on how to grow tomatoes, the only problem is our funding model and our thinking doesn't go beyond what people come to us as a point raised by Mthu, that I focused on producing chocolate and no one broadened my understanding in terms of where I will get the raw material from. So when they come to us, do we then look beyond what they are presenting to us? Are we thinking out of the box or we are thinking just inside the box and only respond to that proposal? I don't want any response at this moment to these issues that I'm raising. I want that to be part of the discussion when we look at ourselves. Are we providing the service that we are supposed to be providing? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. And some of those questions emanating from the big question can also be factored in the afternoon deliberation, Chairperson, today and tomorrow as well. I've noted a colleague right at the back and a colleague on my left and the third one there in that order. Then after that, we'll close the question. If, in any event, that what you want to ask has been dealt with by the chairperson, let's save time and then hit at the top and let's move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Program Director. I actually wanted to follow up on I'm going to withdraw, but I just want to make a point on this one. On the issue of an Oriental Plaza compared to us as people who were previously disadvantaged in a manner that we were sectionalized. There was a Zulu section and a Sotho section that was a sore effect that it is still new. I think Mam Rose here has got a challenge. You know, there is this concept of saying, if Mam Rose Arifa Sorop, it's very chicken welfare. And if Arifa chicken welfare, it means she's got the whole goat. So that concept, I think that the government must come down to us as small business people to teach, or rather to encourage us to unify, to be united. So I'm withdrawing. I was going to elaborate more so that we become a like the Oriental Plaza business people. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. Don't withdraw. Keep it there. Let's put it in the parking lot, which will be part of the deliberations. I think all ideas are welcome. We need to explore as much as possible to assist this very organization. As I say, when I say organization, I mean the committee and the department and the entities as well as one thing. So don't withdraw. Can we draw now? Keep it there. We're putting it in the parking lot. I've just noted it there. Thank you very much. Next.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is the plea to the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee with regards to the informal business sector in general, that maybe, as we're saying, a person that like we'll have other workshops as well, like for, you know, remember the five areas we identified, now we're in the finance, but that, like, I work in the space of informal business or informal within the department, and there's so much that is there that would like really to also have a focus. The majority of our people economically are in that space. Even the document, the briefing document, the first component, it just touches on that. And I think it will need that further articulation and engagement so that the responsiveness with what we've already developed, with the work that we worked on, I think the space at some stage we really need to have a focused attention within the informal business economy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's take that, and then I think Honourable Chair will slightly touch on that, on that point. Thank you.
Thank you. Mine is also not on finance, but it's something that is a concern that I've observed over some years. I come from a rural area, and my concern is that whenever we talk of development, we talk of malls that come to townships and rural areas and invade the space of local business. So what is done to protect local business? Because whenever they come into the space of local business shut down. There are so many stories, social stories, that businesses that were sole providers or in families, that they've actually lost business because a mall was established right in close to where they operate, and they cannot compete on price. And I really enjoyed the presentation Mamkosi was presented today. It's a real challenge that needs to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the point. For the chairperson, and I touched on those two aspects briefly at the beginning of this session in the morning. And I think the chairperson is repeating it over and over, which is very, very helpful, that the lens that we must use must be in the context of what is in the Constitution and what is in the NDP, and as well as, on the lighter note, what is envisaged by this very activist parliament, that is the fifth parliament, in terms of ensuring or strengthening oversight and accountability to ensure that the outcomes that are envisaged in the NDP in this very term are indeed implemented. I think she put it very, very nicely when she made a comment on the radical economic transformation, which is very, very specific. So that is the lens that we need to wear. It's about people of South Africa. And we're focusing on those people who were previously disadvantaged. I think what is coming out is very, very clear. But that is the lens that we need to wear. Chairperson, you want to wrap up before we move to the next presentation? Thank you.
Thanks. I think those two comments are very, very important. Yes, we will have a follow-up, and I think that this, what has been presented here, exposes issues that we need to deliberate on, which would then inform our strategic approach moving forward. Currently, I don't want to be judgmental, but I'm putting it as a question that when we reflect, when we look back over the past 20 years, can we comfortably say the investment that we have made has facilitated change in the space of the small business? And in your case, the informal business, starter shops and tuck shops, do they have a warehouse today? Do they have a distribution channel today? Have we capitalized on the fact that we have three pillars of the economy, mixed economy for South Africa, which is the state participation in the economy, the private sector participation in the economy, and the cooperatives participation in the economy? And if we can
honestly respond to that question to say we understand the three pillars of a mixed economy and we are investing equally to those three pillars, then we would come out of here and in future be proud people. The last one raised by Newton. Malls, if established in a developmental manner, are not a wrong thing. If they are established in a developmental manner, there would be conditions and policies that include those businesses which would be impacted negatively by the establishment of a mall and bring them to ownership of the mall and have an exit strategy of an investor that comes out of that community. Currently, the malls are not being developed in a developmental manner. They are developed in a capitalistic approach. And as a result, they come into the community to kill the existing business and then promote only the provision of low-cost goods and jobs. And that is not a developmental approach. Then we can further discuss how malls could still be delivered, established, but in a manner that does not kill the existing general dealers as well as the tax shops in the area. And the village can open also the opportunity for people to supply the malls, because in rural areas there is no land. But the potatoes that are sold in those malls don't come from that local community.
Thank you, Chairperson. On that note, we are now ready to move to the next agenda item. I have Mr. Toki Johnson. Are we okay? He's available. Please come forward to give us the perspective of the marketing tool. I hope the presentation is ready. Quickly. And then after this presentation, honorable members and colleagues, we will break for lunch. Just immediately after this question and the clarity question, we'll break for lunch. Thank you very much. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and happy birthday again. And everybody. My name is Toki Johnson. Funny name, it's a nickname, but it stuck with me ever since I grew up on a farm in Mpongeni. But I represent a company called BizTown Media. Unfortunately, my partner couldn't be here today. He is unable to get away from Durban. BizTown Media is a marketing platform for cooperatives and small and micro enterprises. Just a bit of background. I'm a passionate South African, and a couple of years ago, I had to get my house painted. I asked a major contractor for a price, and they gave me a price of 53,000 rand to paint my house, which was outrageous. I said to my wife, we don't have that kind of money.
Yeah. We'd like to apologize, honorable members and colleagues. We there's no presentation. I think it could be submitted later, and then you can proceed if that's fine. So thank you very much. Thank you.
The price was way too high. I was chatting to my wife, and she had a small business where she employed a chap by the name of Paul Dube. The business, unfortunately, folded, and Paul was currently out of work. She suggested I phone Paul, and I did that. I phoned Paul, said to him, would you be able to paint my house? He said, absolutely. He came in. The bottom line was that I managed to get my house painted for 13,000 rand, not 33,000 rand. Paul earned himself 7,000 rand for 2 weeks' work. And it got me to thinking, how many Paul Dubes are there in this country? People who have a skill of any sort, whether it's painting, whether it's hairdressing, whether it's advertising, accountancy, I don't care. But there are thousands upon thousands of people who are sitting at home with those skills, unable to start a business because they don't know how to market themselves. And that thought gave rise to BizTown. As I said, it's a marketing platform for cooperatives, small and micro enterprises. The National Development Plan, President Zuma's State of the Nation address this year, many provincial integrated development plans, all refer to the critical need to promote access to markets for cooperatives and small, medium and micro enterprises. Training and mentorship programs are absolutely fantastic, and I believe in them very strongly. But without access to markets, all businesses will fail. There's a saying that goes, give a man a fish and you'll feed him for a day. Teach him to fish and he'll feed himself for a lifetime. I say, well, what happens if that person lives 200 kilometers from the nearest water? And I feel that many of our country people, countrymen and women, are in that predicament. They've got a skill, but they are a million miles away from the marketplace. They don't know how to connect with you and me, with government, with corporate companies who are their target market, to be able to say, here I am. I'm available to do some work for you. I can do it. Now, unfortunately, I'm not able to get onto the site, but I developed a website called BizTown, www.biztown.co.za. I spent 1.3 million rand on developing the site and doing market research. I spent 400,000 rand of that money on marketing the site to see what kind of response we would get from people. We charge 149 rand a month to advertise a business on BizTown. In return, we have committed, when we launch, we're committed to spend 300,000 rand a month on advertising. We came up with that figure in consultation with an ad agency that we've had quite a few meetings with. They have drafted a draft media and advertising plan for us. They believe that figure of 300,000 rand a month is necessary to advertise the site so that we are able to do two key things. Number one is bring new advertisers on board, and number two is to bring new browsers on board, so that when a person is looking for a new supplier, as I said, whether that supplier is a painter, is a plumber, is a hairdresser, is an accountant, he or she will go to BizTown and look for a person who suits their needs. Obviously, we do break down those areas into towns and cities and so on. So if you are sitting in Cape Town as we are today, you don't want to see a whole lot of profiles of people who are in Durban. You want somebody who can supply you here. We need 2.5 million rand to complete our site, to launch it, to get our paying members up to a stage where the business is profitable. That's vital, because once we've got a profitable business, it means that it's sustainable. In return for that 2.5 million rand, if we are able to, and I've approached many government departments, we would like to list 10,000 micro enterprises for free, as it were, on our website. That our business model allows for bigger SMEs to effectively pay
for those smaller enterprises to continue to be marketed. Our marketing will center on three key markets. The general public, where we will have quite a host of advertising. As I said, our advertising agency has come up with a media plan. But it will entail radio, some press, quite a bit of social media marketing. It's becoming an incredibly effective tool. In short, I believe that Bridgetown has the ability to transform the lives of thousands of people in South Africa. It gives them a voice to be able to start their own businesses. We have got a frightening unemployment rate in this country. And I know government is doing its level best to help, I think, close industry. But the fact remains that there are millions upon millions of people who rely on government grants. At Bizcom, we are saying, we're putting our hand up, and we're saying, government is asking for solutions to the problem of unemployment. We're not creating jobs, and that's been one of the problems in accessing funds from government. So many of the forms that we filled in have said, how many jobs will you create? And the fact is that in my office, we will have five people. That's all. And that seems to be a stumbling block. What I can't get across in a form or on a blank piece of paper is the fact that, yes, we are only employing five people in our company. But our company will effectively enable tens of thousands of people to earn their own income. And I think, I get very passionate about it, so sorry, excuse me, but I don't believe that we can live in this country and not offer solutions to things like that. And I'm saying, this town is offering a solution. It's not a silver bullet. It's not going to employ 3 million people. But it's going to allow people to earn an income, to have dignity, to be able to put food on the tables for their family. I've approached, amongst others, CEDA, CETA, the DTI, the Jobs Fund. We have a letter of endorsement from DTI a couple of months ago saying what a fantastic proposal we have put forward to market cooperatives and micro-enterprises. It's fantastic asking other government departments and private companies to assist us with funding. Well, I'm very grateful for the letter. I really am. It's a fantastic endorsement, and sometimes when you, I've heard quite a few presentations this morning, sometimes you feel like you're paddling a canoe uphill and upstream and in severe storms because you can't seem to get people to listen. But this letter, as welcome as it is, doesn't give me funding. The Jobs Fund turned our proposal down on the basis that we aren't employing enough people within our business. CEDA and CETA. CEDA, I've tried for 3 months to get an appointment with the person who heads up CEDA in Durban. I'm afraid I've never been able to speak to the man. I'm actually on first name terms with the secretary, Mariette. She knows me very well. I phone frequently. I cannot get hold of anybody. CETA, pretty much the same thing. But as a small business person, Madam Chair, it's incredibly frustrating trying to access funds because it seems that everywhere I go to, I'm told, no, it's not this department, go here, go there, go there, go there. And I just go around in circles. And I'm very grateful to you for giving me this platform to explain what we do, the solutions that I believe we can offer, and also to see if there are any government departments who are able to assist us with the 2.5 million rand which we need to launch this business. Yes, it's going to be a profitable business. The beauty of that is that we won't need to come back to government each year with a begging bowl. That's the beauty of this business model that we have. Bigger businesses are going to pay for these micro businesses to have a voice in the marketplace. I really do believe in Bosan. I'm passionate about it. I am passionate about upliftment, proper upliftment. I'm not really interested in trying to help somebody who's too lazy to get off their backside and go and find work. What breaks my heart is how many poor Jubers are there in South Africa who would love to be doing some work, but they don't know how to get their skills advertised to the marketplace. This town has that ability. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The questions once again, are there existing... Thank you, sir. You may take a seat. You'll respond from the seat. Thank you very much. The questions once again, resulting from what the chairperson has emphasized, is the existing funding instruments, are they relevant in terms of assisting the government in addressing the triple challenges as we know them, as are contained in the NDP? It's time for us to engage the presentation, honourable members. I have noted honourable Whip, honourable Kura, and honourable Chance in that order. And to the left, yeah, colleague, we'll give you a chance in that order. Thank you, honourable Whip.
Thank you very much, Program Director, and also thanks to Mr. Johnson for the input he has made. I just have one question. In the five that Mr. Johnson speaks of, who are the center, because I understood him to be saying there is the five that is the center. But from that center, as we go outward, more jobs are going to be created. But I want to focus on the five. Who will these five be relative to ownership? In other words, how do the five own? Is it that the five own, or is it that Mr. Johnson owns and then the four are supporting him? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. To clarify, I own 40% of the company. My partner, Mr. Sesan Gobani, own 60% of it. It is a private company, if that is your question. I wasn't 100% certain.
Honourable Wood, do you want to follow up on that? Are you happy with the response? Thank you very much for the response. Honourable Kula.
Thank you. And thank you for the presentation. Surely this whole model can work if your database is big enough. And the whole success of this model is about getting those individuals that are qualified or that got the skills to do certain jobs. So my question is, how will this company build their database? Because that is very important. It's not, the importance is not how many people is working for the company. The importance is the database, because the bigger the database, the more successful this company will
be able to create those connections, those networks, because it's a networking company. And in South Africa, there is a few of these organizations. I mean, the Chambers of Commerce are some of them, BNI. So there's a lot of sort of similar organizations doing the same thing. But it took them years and years of collecting data to start being successful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. If I could just correct you on one aspect. BizTown is a marketing company. It's not a network company. Networking company. BNI is a networking company. And you're quite correct. The bigger our database is, the more successful the company becomes. As I said, we took this to market in order to test it. To test, it's all very well, I think it's a good idea. What does the marketplace think of it? We spent 400,000 rand on marketing the site. And I will say that was in KZN, where I live. I live in Durban. Probably, with the Eastern Cape, one of the toughest markets to do. There's not the money that there is in Cape Town or Gauteng. We had hoped to get 450 members from that ad spend, little less than 1,000 rand per advertiser. We achieved 622, which was 40% over our budget. So, again, you're quite correct. Our database is critical to this. That's one of the reasons why we need to spend 300,000 rand a month in advertising BizTown. We need to get the message across that here is a platform where you can advertise your business. As to the micro-enterprises, I would like to work with CEDA and the Department of Small Business Development to identify 10,000 deserving micro-enterprises countrywide, to put them alongside more, if I can call it, bigger SMEs, more established SMEs, who are going to be paying the 149 rand. The 10,000 won't be. It's critical, the feedback that we got from people who use BizTown to source new suppliers in the 6 weeks that we were operational during our trial. The feedback that we got was that people won't trust, unfortunately, a government database of micro enterprises because they're kind of perceived as being I know they are micro-enterprises, but they're deemed too small to really help. What they liked was having micro-enterprises advertised alongside bigger, more established businesses. It lends those micro-enterprises credibility. So I hope that answers your question. That's one of the reasons we need the funding in order to advertise so that our database can grow.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I hope Honorable Cook is happy with the response. Honorable Sang.
Thanks very much for the presentation. My question relates to the 2.5 million rand that you're seeking. You only list basically government bodies that you've approached. Have you approached any private sector investors, angel investors? And if so, what has been the response, and what is your projected break-even point in terms of time? How many years or how long is it going to take, and what is your projected growth path into 5 years, for example, revenue, profits, and so on?
Yeah. Thank you. I did only mention government, but we have approached venture capitalists, angel investors, with very little success. A lot of them deem the 2.5 million rand to be too small. It's not something that they want to, they're looking for bigger projects to get involved in. Speaking to a lot of people who are in that business, the venture capital and angel funds are almost like a dodo at the moment. They're almost non-existent. It's incredibly difficult
to raise funds for a new venture. People are happy to put their funds, what they term venture capital, is an existing business with a three-year track record of profits, which they can now, if they put in, inject 30 million rand, they can exponentially grow that business. That's what they deem venture capital. The appetite for new startups is exceptionally small. In terms of my break-even, we would need 3,000 members in order to for the business to reach break-even. And we anticipate doing that within the 11th or 12th month of operation, based on the success we had in our launch.
Thank you very much. The hand was up this side.
Thank you very much. Mine is just a clarification question. The 2.5 million financial support required, is it a grant? Or is it a loan that will be repaid someday?
I'd love to get a grant. Thank you. What I would like to say to government is, let's not call it either. Let's say it's payment for services rendered. In return for that 2.5 million rand, we will undertake to advertise 10,000 micro-enterprises on behalf of government for free, for 3 years minimum. If you take into account that we're charging bigger SMEs, 149 Rand per month, what we are offering is in effect about 35 million Rands worth of advertising of those micro-enterprises in return for the 2.5 million rand. So that's the way that I would prefer it to be seen. We are rendering a service for which government will pay us.
So thank you very much. Honourable members, any other follow-up questions on the presentation? We have about 5 minutes or so before we break for lunch. And then Honourable November.
Thank you. I just want to make a small input as an SMME that this initiative I think is a very important one from where I'm standing, because it really is a challenge for a number of SMMEs to market themselves. And when you have a platform that allows you to be exposed to potential clientele, it's very powerful. I would say that also I am part of a certain internet platform, trading platform, but which is for very corporate organizations. And I was fortunate to be accepted in by a big company. Otherwise, I would have never qualified to get into that marketing platform. But with the support of that certain company, I was factored in, which is only for qualified buyers and qualified suppliers. So even this morning, actually last night, I received two new clients, brand new clients. I checked them on the internet, these are the clients we have, and qualified clients. So it is very, they're assisting me in my business. I've got new clients now through that platform. So if there is an opportunity for SMMEs to even get into a platform of such, even for free, even 149 Rand is really small for me, I mean, even for big companies, it's nothing. So it's a really good opportunity, a support mechanism for SMMEs. So I'm very much in support of the initiative.
Thank you. If I may,
Mr. Johnson, I think, but don't be too long, just, I think it was just an augmentation to the input,
yes.
I mean, the presenter that was made, but just touch on what you want
okay.
to say.
Okay. Thank you. When I met with the GTI, one of the issues that they were having, that they raised, was that corporates who are being encouraged to make use of SMEs are complaining that they don't have a database to go to find those SMEs in the first place, to this issue, exactly what you touched on. They were seeing Bridgetown as an answer to that.
Thank you very much. Honorable November.
Thank you, Chairperson. And it's a good thing, very good suggestion. But UFO free loaner is just a problem because we've got something that is called Auditor General. What we call for free to the Auditor General is fruitless in whatever expenditure. I thank you.
Thank you. Essentially, it won't be for free because hopefully government will pay us 2.5 million rand.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. And then let's maybe step on to give it this little aspect of for free. I think it looks like members want to be clear about it. How is it going to be? How is it going to happen? May?
I just wanted to clarify what my understanding was. To me, it doesn't. It's not a free service.
No.
It is a subsidized service.
Yes.
It is a service that Mr. Johnson is proposing that small businesses that cannot advertise themselves be subsidized by government to advertise. So it's not a free service, it's a subsidized service.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And that's why it's not to be first as a loan, but as a, based on that question, it's about support, basically. Honourable members, colleagues, I'm going to propose that we take a lunch break. We are running out of time, as we have noticed on the program. We have two more presentations, Overholdings and Rural Housing Loan Fund, that we seem to take, which were supposed to be dealt with just before lunch. So we are a little bit behind. So, and I'm going to appeal once again that when we engage, let's stick to the point when we come back. And then we'll proceed from there. It's purpose one. I suggest that we come back at least by 2 o'clock. So you have about 45 minutes break, if that would be great. Just around, make sure that I'm going to make sure that you are here at 2, so that we can start at 2 and proceed. Thank you very much, honorable members and colleagues. And I see that almost with all but one honourable members are here, so I should be able to proceed. We're going to take a presentation. The last two that was meant to be taken before lunch, that is Overholdings. The Rural Housing Loan Fund. I also want to indicate that the NDA requested that they come first immediately after the two, because they flying out of Cape Town, and then they have to take the flight. So I've acceded to their request. The meeting has officially started. We're just giving Core Holdings a minute or so to prepare their presentation. I take it it's Mr. Fakazi. Am I not correct? Am I correct? Oh, sorry, yeah. Hey, it's my eyes. I mean, Mr. Tsuma, sorry. Mr. Fagasi is for the ARHLF, and they are also here to follow the presentation. Once again, 15 minutes presentation, 15 minutes points.
Will you be able to distribute my check, my
or questions for clarity, not deliberation. Let's speak to that. Question for clarity, presentation 15:15, that makes 30 minutes. Dr. Tsuma,
Are we ready to go?
1 minute, I just want to...
Okay.
We are ready. Thank you. Over to you, Dr. Suma.
Thank you very much, Chief.
Yeah.
Thank
you very much. Yeah. And I'm putting my timer.
So that there won't be any point of order. Good afternoon, everybody. Chairperson, convener, and all the honorable members. My name is Trevor Chuma. I'm the founder and executive chairperson of Koa Holdings. Koa Holdings is an agribusiness development company focusing on job creation, fighting poverty, and assisting those who are regarded as unemployable by the mainstream sector, those who are regarded as uneducated, illiterate. We focus on assisting such people to get into the mainstream economy. And I'd just like to start by saying, you know, there cannot be peace in any country as long as poverty prevails. And we are talking today about funding and how are these instruments working, are they assisting SMEs? And we are seeing that there's a lot of challenges and a lot of complaints from the SMEs and the cooperatives who are here saying it's very difficult to access this funding. But I would like to say that, you know, change starts with us who are here now. If we want to see this change to make sure the SMEs get the money, we need to start right now with the people here. We can't outsource it to consultants or delegate it. So, Koa, our philosophy is that we want to focus, as I said, on job creation. We believe that if we are going to develop SMEs, we need to have a holistic approach. It can't be ad hoc. You can't task funding to the DFIs and then task training to an LGC service provider, task a training of skills, technical skills to a third party. It will not work. And what we have done, we have tested what I'm telling you. I'm not talking theory. I'm presenting a 2.5 year pilot project in which Koa has spent 5.5 million rands of its own money without one rand from any DFI, any grant, any government institution supporting us. Because like the other people and the other SMEs who've spoken before us and before me, we share their complaints. We share the challenges they've experienced. So I don't want to repeat a lot of what has been said. So what is unique about this model? We have developed a model which is not necessarily unique for agribusiness only. It is a model that can be used in any business, in the stock sales, in the informal traders, the spaza shops, and I've already spoken to some of the speakers that we will already start collaborating with Mrs. Ntunu. We are already collaborating. We are actually starting forthwith, because we need to realize that we can't keep talking stories and having 20 meetings for years and years. We need to start effecting this change. So what Koa does, we work turnkey with an SME, and we are there with them 24/7 every day in their area of work, in their village, for 5 years. Okay? We know that they don't have education, some of them are illiterate. We literally hold their hand. We are passionate about what we do. For us, it is not a job, it is a calling. You see these people in this picture? The portfolio committee has been to this facility twice,
They've met these people here, and they've interrogated them. That we've asked a lot of questions, the Honorable Mabaso. Honorable Chance asked 20 questions. The EFF gentleman is not here today. Yeah, he asked lots of questions to interrogate that, is this real or is this a show? Did we hire people from generations to come and put an act here? Because they couldn't believe it, that these people you see are uneducated. None of them, Adam is standard for, is an orphan. Okay? They've never had a job in their life. Adam is 41. He's never had a job, a formal job in his life. Working at this greenhouse that we have set up as a pilot in Vulameso municipality in Ugu district, KZN, is the first job that they've ever had. Okay? So now, these people also are looking for funding. So, when we approached Itala Bank, we approached NEF, we approached all these DFIs that have been spoken about. And they keep saying, we don't understand what you are talking about. You are saying you can produce, you can build a greenhouse that will produce tomatoes every week. You'll be harvesting every week, twice a week for up to 10 months. Are your tomatoes from space? Because we only know tomatoes are harvested for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And you are telling us these tomatoes will grow up to 20 meters long. What are you talking about? We want to see this thing. Show us first. Once we see that it's working, we'll put money. So we took the challenge, we put our money, and then we invited them to see what we're doing. And to, I must say, to date, we were struggling, but I'm going to come to something good. Unlike the other speakers, I think I have some positive hope and a good ending, because now there's something is happening. So our management team, I just want to put this slide, because I want you to see that Core Holdings, we are not just one. It's not Trevor and his wife. Okay, it is me and a whole list of qualified experts. Some of them are award-winning entrepreneurs on that list. These people exist. You will meet them, and we welcome anyone who wants to come and view our site to test and see it. They can come at any time. Whether I'm there or not, they are able to be shown by those people you saw earlier. They will explain how this thing works, because for the last 2.5 years we've imparted skills. They are producing export-grade tomatoes that have been approved by SPAR, Food and Veg City, and recently MassMart, with actual off-take agreements. So how did we start? You know, I just want to give a bit of background for the benefit of those who haven't been there, because otherwise a lot of what I'm saying might not make sense. So we started in 2012. We've invested our own money. We have had to be very persistent and resilient, because like Mama from Sasta said, you use all your money until you are left with nothing. And we've literally done that. But we thank God that we have had breakthrough and we're making some progress. So this is the structure that we built. It is a greenhouse. For those who don't know, a greenhouse is a structure which is under the field of what is called protective farming. It's high impact, high value farming. In the whole world, and if there's anyone here who can prove me wrong, I'll be grateful. There is no industry that produces per square meter more money at a high profit margin as greenhouse protective farming. I'll give you figures just now. So the cohort demo model, we put 1,000 square meters to test the program. We then spoke to the local in Kosi, because you know, with rural development, you can't come from town with your theories and think it's going to work there. You need to engage the local authorities. So we worked very closely with Amakosi, the chiefs, and we've developed this model to a stage where King Goodwill Zwelithini personally summoned the portfolio committee chairperson to explain this thing. What is this COA thing? Because I'm hearing all my chiefs talking about it. Then I was also summoned by the King with the chairperson of the portfolio committee, Mama Ruth Bengu, to explain, and he said he wants this thing to be rolled out across KZN. That was about 3 months ago. So to give you an impression, let's go back. You see, this 1,000 square meter greenhouse, we spent about 400,000 rand to build it. Then we've achieved to select a group of people who can volunteer to work there. They started off as volunteers because we didn't want people who think they're coming for a free ride. They're going to be getting stipends and grants, and then when the grants end, they run away. We wanted to see that the people are committed. So that's how we check if people are committed. Then we train these people on the job. We are with them. We are explaining how everything is working. So we planted tomato seedlings. 60 days later, we started to harvest. And we were harvesting between 750 to 800 kilograms twice a week, every week. But the personal community couldn't believe this, and Mama Ruth Bengo came to verify it. I said to her, we'll harvest on Tuesday, on Mondays and Thursdays. She came one Monday and saw the volume of the tomatoes and the weight, which were being sold to Spar at 10 rand a kilo. Then we said to her, come back on Thursday. She came back, and she saw again, same thing. You see, so this is a true story what I'm telling you, and the mass impact of that is, if we put 2 hectares, 20,000 square meters, it will cost around 13 million rand to put the investment, the pack house, the fencing, and an electric solar-powered fence, which I'm looking forward to talking to those gentlemen about assisting with the panels. And you will get a yield of between 300,000 to 600,000 kilograms of tomatoes a year. And you're harvesting throughout the year, non-stop. So there are no cash flow challenges in this model. This is why we've actually been able to survive so long, because this particular pilot is self-sustainable. The guys are paid from the money they're making. They know how to run it, you know. And we are not there every day now, because now they've become very good at it. They also have become good at cucumbers and so on. So if you look at it, we are not supplying our tomatoes to a middleman, because with our marketing experts in the team, they have realized that if you go to a fresh produce market like the Joburg fresh produce market, the Tshwane one, the Durban one, you are selling your tomatoes to a middleman who will just receive your tomatoes without paying you anything, and he will put between 15 and 20% service fee for just facilitating to sell to retailers who come there to buy. So then, and then after he does that, he will go to Spar, Massmart, Fruit and Veg, these people, and then he will sell it to them at that 20%, sometimes 50% more. You see? Because these commodities are not all readily available. So if they're not available, you will sell it to them for more. So, am I out of time already? Okay, I've got 2 minutes. I'm not going to bore you with a lot of other challenges, because you already know what they are. I want to just say that if it wasn't for the portfolio committee coming to see us 2 years after we've been battling, and this is a picture of when they came, we would still be battling like everyone else. But we have in this portfolio committee a different team, because they are doing something about it. They are not sitting and folding their hands and getting paid. They do something about it. I must also compliment the Department of Small Business, the managers. We've got here Jeff, who is the cooperative chief director. He has been very instrumental and personally came from Pretoria to register 12 cooperatives with this team. This is the first for me. I've never seen this. I've never experienced this with government. This is what we need. I must also compliment FIFA, because last week on Friday, we were in their office with Vuelwa and Takanya, who are here, and about 6 or 5 of the other managers. They are now, they've been there, the managers, they know what we're talking about, they understand the model, and they've committed now to work with us. So I just want to say, you know, change starts with admitting that I'm wrong. You know, how can I do it better? How can you, what is it that you're seeing that can help me do this better? And I'm seeing that the department and the portfolio committee are doing this. And for once, we're having progress, where they are now looking forward to getting some funding to roll out 12 farms for 12 cooperatives, 100% owned by those cooperatives. And these cooperatives will be making between 4 and 10 million rand a year turnover at 40% net profit. And I'm saying, let us focus on projects that give mass impact, that can allow them to repay money to CIFA, so CIFA can loan the next people.
Let us not just be putting money just to give a good picture that we are doing something and the projects are failing and we are not making money. And I just want to finish 1 minute to say and say, sorry, Sisi. I want to show you that we are also diversifying. In that box there, we have our new products. There's three of them we can just pass just to see the quality. This is Unogwacha, Umvundla, Rabbit Meat that Koa is developing. And over the last few years working on this project, we have now become the biggest exporter of rabbit meat. We are exporting to Mauritius, we are exporting to Angola, we are exporting to Tanzania and Malawi. And some of the people in our province and who are supposed to be helping us, don't even know this. Our farm, we've got a farm here in Durbanville, and our abattoir here. So this is something we are doing. We are also developing other products. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm sure you saw me whispering to the chairperson. When you grew up, I grew up in a rural area. And we used to chase rabbits big time. So I'm asking, how do you touch it? It was quite an interesting thing to be able to produce meat in that capacity. You know, it was a very, very good presentation. Colleagues, honorable members, it's a very exciting presentation, and that tells you that indeed there are effective solutions to address the triple challenges. The question is, I think we know it, how responsive are the existing funding models and instruments to this particular quest to assist us to go forward? Honorable members, this gives us an opportunity to ask clarity-seeking questions. I've noted Honorable Kruger. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I just want to ask FIFA how far are they and how willing are they to finance this project? Thank you.
Very straightforward question, FIFA. Do you have FIFA here? Or you want to respond to that?
We do have FIFA here, but FIFA may be allowed by the CEO of FIFA just to give an intro to the answer and let him finish it.
Thank you. Perfect.
Honorable Kruger, what I started to see from the beginning, there was a lot of skepticism on the program because a lot of the people who were approaching didn't understand and still don't understand how do you get rabbit meat to be like that and tomatoes to be harvested every week. Okay? Because they're not area specialists. But I must say, through the persistence of your committee, and especially Mama Ruth Bengo, who saw something unique in what we're doing, for the first time in our lives we met her in December last year. When you came, she wasn't with you. She had to go somewhere. Then she came again when she saw Honorable Chance's blog about what is happening. So, FIFA also, she insisted that they come and see this project, and they did come with their board, with their other executives. And since then, they started to see the light. They started to realize what is going on, because they spoke to these cooperative members and found that the business is not owned by COA. We are not owning it and having these people work for us. The owners of the business is the cooperative. They own the greenhouse. They are working there. You see? And then we say that now what they need is money to expand this to 1 hectare or 2 hectares so that they can make millions. Another thing that happened, Masma don't give offtake without their executives coming there. So they've been there and we've spoken to see that we've got an offtake agreement. Now we need you to support. At the meeting last week Friday, the way that meeting happened, it was an integrated approach. They called the department heads to be there. They were there. And I think I'm going to let him finish with what we are now working on because you need to hear from him. Thank you.
I think maybe just to comment, we are excited about the project. We are looking at it and we are packaging it in such a way that the individual cooperatives will benefit out of the transaction. So the way we are looking at it is not the money going necessarily into COA, but it's going into those individual cooperative enterprises to roll out the project in various areas that have been identified. So it is not, but it's the team is on the ground working on on the transaction.
Thank you very much. Yesterday the chairperson said we're not necessarily here to celebrate the successes and things, but in this one you can't help it sometimes because it's quite an emotional sort of thing to realize the progress that has been made from the presentation. I said this morning that the role of Parliament and this very committee is to ensure government by the people and for the people. It's not me, it's in the Constitution. So that's very, very important. And I think we get into it. Honourable members, any other clarification question? Or have all the questions been exhausted by the side visits and all these things?
Chairperson, thank you. It's not about, it's not a question actually. It's just a comment that we're waiting for a call. Because all this must cough, as you mentioned. On this must cough, so there is my call and in work up. On the before right of work. Now, cough.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, do you have something to say? Thanks.
Thank you. What I don't have a question, I just have a comment. That an integrated approach works because MassMart and CoA had interacted before and MassMart had rejected CoA. The technical person who had gone to look at the project did not understand the model. And the report was then to MassMart, there is no capacity. Because that person thought that the CoA was going to supply MassMart from the pilot project. And after having invited MassMart to the portfolio committee and engaging Mr. Brian Leroni, for him to understand the model, it then became clearer that the model is CoA is transferring the skill and the technology to cooperatives, which are the ones that are going to be supplying MassMart. And CoA is guaranteeing the quality and the supply, which is what drives away the retail sector to say, we are reluctant to give contracts because there is no guarantee for quality and supply and we can't have our shelves empty when we need stock. Then the involvement of CoA gives that guarantee to MassMart that the quality will be the same, and the supply will be maintained all the time. And also, the second aspect is for officials not to interact with paper proposals. For officials to go out on the field and see for themselves and understand what is being done. And in this case, I mean the officials from the department, the officials from FIFA, and the officials from CEDA. As a result of that, they also understood the model as opposed to interacting with paperwork. If they were interacting with paperwork, they would not have understood. They would not even have seen that there is a 25 million structure in Ugu, which can be used as a pack house and a distribution center, which MassMart also came and approved that this is a very good structure. That structure is currently rented to Isuzu, which is the structure that was built and completed in 2007 by Ugu District Municipality as a pack-up and a fresh produce market. Only now it will then start to work for its purpose. So going out to the field is very, very important and not interact with paperwork. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Did I see Honorable Champs sent? No? Okay, thank you very much. I would like to close this discussion. It was very quite a moving one, I must say, from my side. I felt so emotional. And thank you very much. We're taking the next one from RHLF. And I'm also glad that this discussion went straight to 30 minutes. We expect the same thing from RHLF. Tate Fagazi. Am I correct? Thank you.
Okay, while they are sorting that out, let me explain how Mr. Jabu Fagazi comes here. During the budget votes, I visited a stand, an exhibition stand of the Department of Human Settlement. And I looked at the material that was, I collected the material that was being exhibited there. And the one that, the one brochure that attracted me was the one which was written Rural Housing Loan Fund. And then I saw also something about the stock sales as I was reading that that pamphlet. And during the night I read through it. And I then found the DG of the Human Settlement and asked him about it. And he forwarded me the number of Mr. Jabu Fagazi, whom I phoned the following day, and I arranged a meeting with him to try and understand. And why I looked at that pamphlet, it's because I'm from rural areas. And most of the houses of where I was born are mud houses. And I was attracted to that, to say, if there is a program called a Rural Housing Loan Fund, it's good for my community, where I was born, in Hadis, in the Womya Gwamati, Eskotin Central Goyenkom. So, but then, after interacting with Jabu Fagazi, I realized that there's an opportunity for creating a funding model for rural projects under small business development using the same method of stock sales, which is why in this workshop we have NASASA and we have the Rural Housing Loan Fund. The Rural Housing Loan Fund is government money for human settlement. It's channeled through the stock sales. That's why they are here. For NASASA and the Rural Housing Loan Fund. Because here we are looking at how best can we improve our services to communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee and all the colleagues who are present here. I think the Chairperson has introduced me sufficiently, and thank you very much for that. Let's have the outline of the presentation, which indicates the broad areas on which we will talk. It's too low. Is it better now? Thank you. I think it's important that I give the background on the establishment of RAS and our mandate first. We were established in 1996 by the national government. We are a result of a partnership between our government and the German government. I think colleagues here and members of the Portfolio Committee know that we have a bi-national agreement with the German government. Through that cooperation, the German government made a grant of about 154 million rand in 1996 to our government so that our government can assist in enabling people in rural areas to access finance so that they can improve their housing conditions. Those who are old enough will recall that around the period, many banks were closing branches in rural areas, and the access to financial services in general was a challenge for many people in rural areas. So as a result of that, there was a South Commission which also identified the need to address access to financial services in rural areas. So we are a result, I mean, of that context. So when they established, there were founding principles that were agreed to between our government and the general government. These principles actually give context to our mandate. I'm not going to go point by point, but our mandate actually comes from that from those founding principles. We report to the Department of Human Settlements. We have a very clear mandate on which we focus. Our mandate is to enable access to housing finance, unsecured housing finance, let me emphasize that, to people who are in our target market. Our mandate has three legs. The finances that we facilitate have to be used for a housing-related purpose. That's the first element of our mandate. So which means people can use our finance to build new houses, extend new houses, improve the quality of their houses, like in rural areas as Zuma was indicating. People use sometimes much, you know, a place to build houses, but they need to improve the quality of those houses, maybe like purchasing bags of cement and to actually plaster their homes. Some, in some instances, they are fencing their homes, or also enable, you know, access to financial services like water, you know, electricity. We know our government has delivered in terms of services to rural households. They also need to connect, to that. So those are all accessible uses in terms of our mandate. Rural areas was broadly defined in terms of our mandate to include rural areas as areas on communal land, farm areas, but also small towns. In terms of income, we focus on low-income earners. Currently, that's people that includes people who are earning less than 15,000 rand per month. So I need to indicate that the maximum or the upper limit gets revised on a regular basis by the Minister of Human Settlements. It's 15,000 from April last year. Prior to that, it was 9,800. Prior to that, it was 7,500. And then I can go back. But the idea, as we all know, is that we need to ensure that we enable as many people as possible in regards to access finance, including your professionals. When we motivated to the minister to increase the upper limit, it was out of realization that a number of teachers, you know, nurses, actually were approaching our intermediaries to access finance to build their house in rural areas. But even with that increase in the upper limit, I just need to emphasize that our key focus is still on people who are earning 3,500 rand and less per month. And you will recognize that these are very same people that our government is focusing on in terms of various programs that are addressing poverty and inequality. In particular, in human settlements, these are the people who qualify for a free government house. Lastly, we also have, as a government-owned entity, to make sure that we support the broad rural development program of our government. So our funding, in other words, has to find its way into those prioritized rural nodes that you all know. I think there are 27, if I'm not mistaken, or less. So I'll show you down, how much, has gone to those areas since we started tracking our loans. In terms of the market that we serve, is very, very, very huge. The upper table actually indicates the number of households in rural areas. Statistics South Africa defined rural areas in its census 2011 as areas that are communal land as well as farm areas. But as I've indicated, our mandate is broader than that. In those rural areas as defined by Statistics South Africa, there are about 4.7 million households. The sad part is that annually we only, I would say, reach about 1% of those households defined by the number of loans that we disperse. If we define our mandate broadly to include areas outside of those core rural areas, such as small towns, then our mandate is even much bigger. Our market, rather, is even much bigger. It's about 8.3, but again, annually we reach about 0.5% of people in the market. I think I need to indicate that we are not saying here that everybody in that table will qualify for our products. So we looked in the second table at the number of households who fall within the upper income limit that has been set for us. It's about 62%. Again, we are not saying that everybody will actually need necessarily to access our finance, but certainly many people in rural areas, as you all know, and in many small towns are yearning to access or finance to improve their housing conditions, whether it's government subsidy or finance that they can use to improve their housing conditions.
I think it's very important, Chairperson, that I use photographs because photos sometimes tell a better story than the words. In terms of the profile of people who benefit from us, in the picture there, it's a pensioner who has accessed finance from one of our intermediaries to a family pensioner on Lave. It's professionals like a nurse in Motema, Elias Matolet in Libombo, who access finance to extend the house of her parents. Sometimes we assist people who have received, you know, service sites to access finance so they can begin to invest in a permanent house for themselves, like that lady in Kwakwa. There's a member of a cooperative in Bochabelo called Bomedi Bacha, who access finance from a cooperative who is one of our intermediaries to build her house. And there's a factory worker in Emandeni, Kwasomenjin. She works at Wafteve in one of the factories there. She accessed finance to build the house for her family, as you can see in the photograph. We went there first, and then when we visited her later, she had subsequently incrementally improved the quality of her house. As you can see, it's painted, and also it has been fenced. Now, in terms of the business model, I indicated that we are set up as a wholesale financier, which means we do not lend directly to the members of the public, but we have intermediary partners that help us to implement our mandate. The first segment of our intermediaries will be commercial intermediaries who are registered with the National Credit Regulator, who access funds from us and then on lend to individual borrowers across the country, mainly formerly employed. So through them, we've been able, since inception, to reach formerly employed people within the constraints of our budget. And then the second category is community-based organizations. That's what the chairperson is talking about, that what we are saying is that we need to work with community-based organizations because through them, we'll be able to reach those informally and self-employed people who are in the second economy. I can see that I'm running out of time. But anyway, then the last group, we are trying to identify worker-based organizations that we can also work with. Well, that's the capital structure. I'm not going to talk about it, but it shows you the funding that we have and the sources of those funds. Pricing policy, I think I need to talk about this a bit because I read the briefing note and I think it raised the issue about how we as DFI are actually charging, you know, our market much, much higher. I think I saw 40%, I saw 110%. I think what we have been doing as Ralph has been to find ways of making sure that we lower the cost of credit for the end users. In terms of the pricing policy, that's how we actually are giving facilities to our intermediaries, so that those who are accessing funds at a discount from us, they can pass over the benefit to the borrowers. I think the only, before I just raise my concern, let me just indicate that we have looked at how can we enable a cheaper access for the members of the cooperatives, because we know most of them are not formally employed, they are informally employed. So with them, we are charging them prime minus 2